Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Academy Award winner J.K. Simmons stars in the new MGM Plus original series, The Westies.
There it is, Javits Center.
Biggest construction project in the history of New York falls into the lap of the Irish.
This Irish crime gang built New York City on blood, sweat, and loyalty. Their legend is true.
The Italians outnumber us about 100 to 1.
Their story is criminal.
This Irish guy's threatening war.
He's gotta go.
Keep out of Hell's Kitchen.
The Westies. Watch now. Only on MGM Plus.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
What killed the dinosaurs? The Ice Age!
You want a cup of joe with you?
I'm gonna make you famous, Lizzie.
It's not Al anymore. It's Dunk.
Dunkachino?
Don't mind if I do.
I'm the Joker, baby.
All right. Joined for the first time. We're recording this out of order by Kirk Minahan. Kirk, welcome to the pod for the first time.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Good to see you again, Kirk.
How exciting.
Come on.
I know you're excited to hang out with Gooch on the podcast.
Oh, that's right. Jesus, I forgot. It was such an important feud in my career. I forgot that Bob Goochman I listen to you guys sometimes, made a cunty face at the suggestion that somebody may be joining his fucking movie podcast.
Hey, to be fair,
here
though.
Here we are.
What was that, Gooch?
I said, here we are.
Fantastic response, boy. Lincoln Douglas right here. Everyone buckle
Gooch
in.
Gooch is mildly responsible for – Gooch is a something. Major scorekeeper on the dozen, though. It's almost like he's had a hand in your MVPs, though, on the dozen.
Does he have the ability to speak? I've listened to the show before. I'm confused. What's going on here, Gooch?
Only when Jeff allows me to.
Okay.
Usually I just search for breaks in his speaking and then try to jump in.
Okay.
But yeah.
Well,
no.
All right. Okay. Good.
Let's talk Oscars. Kirk, I'll start with you since you're joining us. We didn't really talk too much last night about it, but kind of talk a little about Kimmel. Thoughts on the we mentioned earlier at the top, insanely vanilla show.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. They talk about how everything's trying to change and move forward and modernize. It felt to me like now the winner, obviously the movie wouldn't have won in say 1995 or 1990, but it felt like a mid-90s Oscar to me. Like Kimmel is sort of did this crystal thing last night, like a couple of mild shots and sort of inserted himself at the beginning. And there was just no juice to the entire night. It just feel, and look, it's never going to change. It's always going to be 3 hours. And it just is. And I'm okay with that, but this is what it is. It's going to lose audience every year going forward. You know, I'm trying to think of the high point of the night for me outside of, you know, it was unexpected. Like every winner, there was no shocker. There was no moment last night where I was like, wow, this is a great Academy Awards moments. It's so forgettable. You know, it's 4 years from now, you won't remember it. You know, I think we disagree on the movie, and that's okay. Like, I don't have a problem with that. But yeah. from a actual Oscar telecast, just like I said, straight out of 1996.
I didn't think it was funny when he brought the donkey on stage.
Well, that's what I'm saying, Gooch. Like, it's sort of, it's kind of that thing. Like, oh, great. Like, Billy Crystal would have, and Billy Crystal was a great Oscar host. Now I'm older, so I think that. But that's exactly what Billy Crystal would have done. Like, and that's what, I guess what Kimmel represents now for that generation younger than you guys, I guess. I don't know. But I felt, you know, and then he kind of did a monologue. Then he was gone for a while. And you know, for me anyway, I've had it with these musical numbers. They go on forever and ever and ever. And the one I like the one that won. It didn't translate well live. Lady Gaga one did nothing for me. You had big stars last night as part of it.
So yeah, still, huge stars.
It just goes on forever and ever. And it was the first ever triple crown for me. I had never heard it, once it was nominated, I had never heard of the movie. I had never seen the movie. I had never heard of the performer. And I had never heard of the song, that Diane Warren song. I had no idea about any of it. And I pay attention as much as you guys do. I'm like, what is this? Why is this? I would rather just say, you know what? You know, this year is like they did with the Godfather thing, which got screwed up because it was right after Will Smith, obviously. Yeah. This year is X anniversary of whatever. And give me 3 minutes of footage on that and bring out two people from that movie and have them give out an award. That's so much better. I don't need to see any of, you know, it just, they have no feel for it. That's forgetting the insane like infomercials with Disney and Warner Brothers, which was I don't even know what was going on.
Where did they get the money for? One was the most egregious one,
right?
If you ask me, I don't know what the fuck that was. Still,
what? Wait, wait. You mean the Little Mermaid?
The weird commercial Melissa McCarthy was in.
I'm talking about the infomercial within the Oscars with Melissa McCarthy and the woman who's starring in it. And then, so I get that. So look, it's Synergy. It's owned by Disney. I get it. It's weird. I get it. What's that?
Who was that?
Sorry.
No, it wasn't me.
I did hear someone too. No, the Warner Brothers one.
Warner Brothers, right. Yeah.
Gooch, you just said it. They've been canceling movies for tax write-offs. Like, did Disney give them a free spot?
Yeah. What was my theory on it? I forget. It was like Disney wanted to do one of those commercials bad so they can get a stock bump. So they were just like, yeah, you know what? Everybody gets to do one. So that way we don't look like we're losing integrity.
I was waiting for Universal. I was like, there's got to be a Universal one. Like, there's got to be something else. It was just so fucking weird.
Are they paying for that? Are they paying the Academy? Are they paying all of a sudden Morgan Freeman and Margot, and she obviously Barbie's a Warner Brothers movie, right? It was in that montage.
He referenced it. Barbie, this unreleased movie.
And I guess, and maybe in 2023 going forward, that's how the Academy has to make, how this stays on network television. I have no idea, but it was really bizarre.
Super fucking sweet.
I liked all the commercials for fucking Autodesk, which is just an AutoCAD for movie makers. They kept making that Autodesk commercial.
Very like, anybody like
who's watching that is like, it's like a $10,000 program. It's expensive shit.
Someone said this and they were like, there was something off about this year's broadcast and they couldn't quite put a finger on it. And I completely agree with that. There was just like the commercials. It was odd.
It all seemed a little like almost a little drugged. I don't know what was going on. Yeah. I'll say this. I don't know where you're going to go next. I like him. I know all you guys like him. I talked about this on my show earlier today. Brendan Fraser?
Fraser. Yeah. Fraser, yes.
I like him a lot. I'm glad. I'm fine that he won. The movie didn't do much for me. But like he is to the point where he gives these awards. Like he is so surprised he's winning these Academy Awards and these other awards. Like you can't be that surprised. You were nominated. You were there. It was almost like they woke him up from like it was like he switched bodies, like a Freaky Friday thing. Like you were the huge favorite to win this or whatever, the co-favorite. It's not that shocking. I don't know. I mean, I criticize everything, but it was fine. The winning speeches were fine.
Yeah.
I think some of the choices in 30, 40 years from now may not be great. For these winners, but that's okay. I mean, look, I'm the same age my dad was when Pulp Fiction came out, and my dad had no idea what Pulp Fiction like. No, he was just like, I don't know what this is, and I thought it was great. Everything Everywhere All at Once, I think, is now one of these movies where I'm like, oh, all right, this probably isn't for me. I'm getting a little older now, but that's okay. Like, you know, it just didn't land for me. But you know, the fact that it's like one of the most honored movies in the history of the Academy Awards to me. Especially above the line, doesn't feel like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest or Silence of the Lambs to me, but obviously it was a different night last night.
How many were ahead of it in terms of overall Oscars won? Is it five?
Seven.
Seven. I know Slumdog won eight, I remember. That was the most.
It's the most since Slumdog.
I do like that it was kind of the Academy embracing like a weirder movie and like how they can like – those movies are good too versus like, you know, fucking Green Book or whatever bullshit-ass like social messaging movie that like they was Oscar bait. You know what I mean? Like it was an original creative movie and like that is the type of stuff that should be getting award love and not the stuff that's built specifically to win an award.
None of the five of us were like big All Quiet in the Western Front fans, right? Like, I think we all landed pretty like it's fine.
I liked it.
It was in my top ten. Yeah. It was in my top ten.
One of my favorite books of all time.
I really enjoyed it.
Great book.
Only three movies won multiple awards last night. Everything Everywhere All at Once, All Quiet, and The Whale.
Makeup and best actor. Yeah.
Yeah. A24 swept the. They swept the majors. I guess that's what you'd call it. Best director, best picture, best actor, best actress, supportings. We got them all. It's pretty nuts.
Just one last broadcasting. It's a strange thing last night they've never done before where they paired the nominee, the presenters together to give out the acting awards at the same time, which I thought was a weird flow. And I think, look, I get the reason why they had two people out there with the whole Will Smith thing. I think they had Halle Berry out there with Chastain maybe. But like the start of the show, you had two people coming out giving, first of all, they said the first award they would give out was supporting actor. It wasn't. They gave out something before that. Yeah. And then they brought out two, and I was like, oh, they're doing this at the same time. It was just the timing of it. They could never, I think they never got
somebody else was supposed to present too, I think, and they had COVID and had to drop late.
Glenn Close.
That's
right. Yeah. I really wish like
her and the Oscars, man.
I feel like Kimmel was very tame. I know it's not that type of show, but I would love if it was just somebody actually bitingly funny. Like it's not a Gervais type thing, but Gervais hosting it and being like legitimately funny and like aggressive towards these like not phony phonies, but like, you know, these very high society people. I think that would have been way more fun than Kimmel making like 500 of these very mild, mild digs.
And what hung over everything was the story of the year in movies was a guy who wasn't there last night.
Yeah.
Who's not being there is just, I don't know if it's a.
Well, Cameron either. Hey, Jim, I actually didn't realize Jim Cameron was going to be there.
Right.
Yeah. So, but, you know, no Cameron.
Cruise and Kimmel, Cruise and Kimmel have a relationship. They've done a lot. Like, you know, you kind of figured Cruise would be part of the joke all night. He might actually be playful for once. I don't know if it was his concerns about jokes or being, or Nicole Kidman. I have no idea, but. It was really Top Gun was the story of the year. Like what, you know, in the movie's nominated for Best Picture, he's not there.
They did make a really Scientology weird. Joke. Maybe that was the trade off. Hey, you know, Tom Cruise or make the L. Ron Hubba Hubba joke, where one or the other.
Only to be topped by the Malala Land joke.
There, I mean, I there was Malala, great stuff. Too much Malala. Like it's 2023.
You know what was weird too? James Cameron not being there. He was the butt of almost every joke, I feel like, for Cameron. Like he had 15 lined up for James Cameron versus anybody else. It's like, what's the big deal with James Cameron? Like, yeah, you make a couple of jokes here and there. Why is he the punching bag all night for making what? The third highest grossing movie of all time? Getting people into the theaters?
It is funny because it's like what you said, Kirk. It's like maybe it was like for a reason for a joke, but he did dip into the most cliche well on both Cruise and Cameron, where it's like it's Scientology, then it's Jim Cameron has a big ego. Like that's the, the cliche bit every time.
He's a wife guy. Bad at marriage.
Okay. I don't think there's anything else really to just – nothing shocking. Almost all the favorites held for the most part. The only like kind of odd – what?
I was going to ask, do you guys think there was like a message from up top to pull back like politically? Because like usually these Oscar things, they go way over the top. Like there's political messaging on every single acceptance speech presentation. It didn't feel like there was a ton of that at all. Like there was some here and there, but
they had a George Santos joke.
It was, I feel like it's,
that was the max from Jimmy Kimmel, one George Santos joke.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like it's a coincidence though. I'm because you're right, but every so often, every few years, there'll be one where it's like, wow, they like nobody came up there and talked about deforestation or some shit. Like it's all the speeches were generally about the films, which is nice.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, I think the only like kind of crazy one that went against the typical models is Cate Blanchett not winning Best Actress. The BAFTAs usually is the indicator for that award, like very strongly. She didn't win. BAFTA indicates actor too, but it's kind of hard to judge actors here because Brendan Fraser just didn't go to the Globes for obvious reasons.
Right.
So everything else kind of held form. Nothing crazy, but I think kind of like where you stand, Kirk, and I tweeted this last night, even if you didn't love everything ever at once, it is like refreshing to see like, oh,
yeah, unique,
inventive, something different. Like, we'll see.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, I don't think anybody's going to look back and say this was a classic.
No.
Best pick, like, you know, one of the great movies of all. It's been a long time since we've had one of those, no doubt about it, classic Best Picture winners. So,
what do you think was the last one?
Oh, like Parasite? Parasite felt like a runaway.
Not,
I guess.
Leading into it, maybe, but that's not classic,
though. To me, Parasite is like, is all time. But
I mean, I would go back to No Country. Yeah. I mean, I know that's
I was thinking Slumdog the next year.
Yeah, which I guess maybe. I mean, I know a lot of people think 12 Years a Slave is a great, you know. I don't know.
It's not exactly that a movie was, that we watch. Like,
no, but I'm just saying. A great, you know, a great.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
So I wouldn't even put it that way. But I'm just thinking of, you know, I don't know, but yes, the last couple of years, Jesus Christ.
What there there was a run. Yeah, The Departed, No Country, then Slumdog seems like we may not get one.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, it's been a long time, but maybe distance will make us think that way about
it. It wasn't shocking, but I'm still like, just because of like the odds going into it, but Jamie Lee Curtis winning Best Supporting Actress, like, what the fuck, man? Like, she was the third best supporting actress in her own movie. And there was other supporting actresses in other movies that were better than her. She was like a bit character in the movie. Like, it just makes no sense to me at all.
These things, you know how it is, like stories start to get momentum. Like the Jamie Lee Curtis story meant way more to the voters than they wanted to see her win and do her thing. And I mean, I would have voted for I actually thought Carrie Condon had a chance to win last night.
Me too.
I thought she was going to be the upset.
Mm-hmm. I was hoping she was going to win. She was great. I mean, that movie won nothing, correct?
Did not
win
nothing.
Completely. Yeah. Elvis got shut out. That got shut. The Fablemans win anything? No, right?
Elvis 0 for 8. Loser. Boz Luhrmann. Bozo Luhrmann. Right.
Bad loser man.
This shit movie.
Yeah, I thought Banshees would get an upset, maybe with Carrie Condon, or get, because you know every now and then they'll give screenplay as a consolation prize, but didn't get that. Women Talking.
And I mean I'm maybe in the minority. I love the Fablemans, and
I did too.
For Spielberg to direct like a pretty dark, actually kind of crazy introspective movie and have it land, first of all, no one to see it. And it won no Oscars. Is just after last year, West Side Story, kind of the same thing. No one went to see it. Like, obviously, that, like, there's another sign, like a mark. It is completely generational now. Things have totally changed, which
I need to just make another blockbuster. You know what I mean? I need to make a movie that isn't The Post or something introspective or something like, you know what I mean? Because his directorial style is so distinct and so built for that big screen experience. I just need that movie again. And like West Side Story had that to a degree for sure, but like that's not a blockbuster. That's not a blockbuster movie. You know what I mean? I would really just love to see that from him again.
Right.
And no, none of that weird Minority Report or artificial intelligence, weird filtered bullshit. Keep that in the back pocket forever.
Yeah. I was thinking that before we started recording, like, I wonder if I would take the under on like half an Oscar for Steven Spielberg, the rest of his career. Cause I feel like he's been really trying for that next one. Like, he's made a lot of big attempts. He keeps getting nominated. He got nominated for, I think, War Horse, Lincoln, West Side Story, and now this. I feel like if there was ever a movie that was set up for him to win the Oscar, it was probably
The Post. Got a few. Like, all of them got nominated.
Yeah, that's the thing. He's basically put out nothing but great movies. I mean, he had, you know, every so often he'll have a bad one. But even his, like,
he sets his own standard, and I don't think he's met that standard. Other than, like, probably Fablemans and West Side Story. He had, like, a weird gap. He had a 10-year gap where he didn't really meet that, I feel like.
If we're giving out legacy awards to Jamie Lee Curtis, though,
does not deserve a legacy award.
Oh, yes, come on. Yeah, and he's won two, so I mean, he's also he's probably what, 77 or 78, so time's running out. But I actually agree with Kat. Like, I don't need to see him make any more of these Oscar kind of time's running out. Go make there were rumors he was going to direct that Superman movie a few months ago. Like, go do something like that. Go put your input. To me, the scene when Michelle Williams was kind of dancing around and they kind of realized how nuts she was, was like directing that nobody else does. So, I mean, he's still the best out there. So I'd like to see that instead of, you know, the fucking Post. Like, I just, 8,000 directors can direct The Post, you know?
I did think his West Side Story was one of the, like, his best. And
that's the thing. He can do things that no other director can do, which is why I'd like him to do things that no other director can do. Direct subjects that no other director can do. Don't do fucking up jump documentary.
This episode of Lights, Camera, Barstool brought to you by Game Time. Game Time, the absolute best way to get tickets for any event, created by fans for fans. Ticketing app that makes it easier than ever to score last minute deals on tickets to sports, concerts, shows. We have all on this podcast used Game Time. Me personally, Rose Bowl, recently saw a great Texas basketball game. Took down Iowa State. They're a 2 seed in the tournament now. Springsteen tickets. Game Time is a great way to get those tickets for events you want to go to last minute. NCAA tournament coming up. Maybe you live in one of the cities where the tournament's going to be. Use Game Time, because Game Time is going to be the place to get those tickets, whether you do it at the last second or you're planning ahead, maybe for the Final Four, baseball season coming around. Download the Game Time app or go to the website, enter email, and redeem code LCB for $20 off your first purchase on Game Time. Get rid of that hassle. enjoy the game. The purchase process is so quick and easy. Transferring tickets is insanely easy. Game Time is the number one spot to go to get tickets for anything, not just sporting events, concerts, Broadway shows, all of that and more. Thank you to Game Time.
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 86, season 2. Jeff D. Lowe, Ken Jack, Chris Gooch. Coming at you. I got a new camera, by the way, and it really makes my eyes look just beet red. It's very weird. Coming at you post-Oscars. I think we're coming out a little early. We're coming out on Monday as opposed to early Tuesday drop. Just because it's the Oscars, the 95th annual Oscars, not really exciting whatsoever. Some cool stuff. Pretty we're very happy about a lot of it. But nothing crazy, very vanilla milk toast Oscars, which is not that shocking post Will Smith, Chris Rock.
The funnest stuff happened in the pre-show, like Ashley Graham fucking up that interview with Hugh Grant.
Did she fuck that up? Also a dick.
She didn't understand what he was saying. He's like, oh, this whole pre-show thing is very Vanity Fair. And like he's talking about the book. And the book is about like how pretentious and like shallow high society is. And she's like, oh yeah, the after party. It's going to be so much fun.
It was pretty tough. I think she was largely not that great. I think Vanessa Hudgens has gotten like pretty solid at the carpet.
She should have been the number one option.
Yeah. I still don't know why ABC is not using their actual like interview talent like they used to. Very odd. Yeah. I don't get that. That shift happened, I think, after I left. Because most of the people who produce – they do a great job producing it. It's the people that produce GMA. Most of them produce the Oscars pre-show, which is not really connected to the Academy at all. Like the Academy Awards are a completely different production, like very different production. But Ashley Graham was awful in other interviews. But the Vanity Fair kind of was tough, but Hugh Grant was a dick.
He was. He didn't give her much to work with, to be fair.
And it
the other ones are bad things. Like she did the same bullshit to Pedro Pascal, the whole fucking people love you. You should download TikTok. All the girls love you there. Like, shut up, dude.
He's
sick of this.
He's gonna quit doing like public.
He's gonna be a hermit.
Yeah, he's gotta be sick of that shit.
He's gonna become a hermit. And then they made him say my year of dicks. He gets to present at the Oscars and they make him say something sexual. Unbelievable.
That was the biggest. We're going to get the 16-year-old girls on Twitter and Tumblr riled up. We're going to put them up there with Elizabeth Olsen, mommy and daddy. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
Lame.
The
I was about to play like fucking Charlie D'Amelio present.
The show in general was I think, fine. We'll talk more about it. We have Kirkman Ann coming in a little while. We'll talk more about just the Oscars in general. We're going to do a draft, too, of the worst Oscar bait movies, which – doesn't necessarily mean this other draft to work. It's got to be a bad movie, like critically and audience pan for the most part. But it's a movie that either got very few nominations and was propped up to be a nomination king, or just stunk and got nothing. Which I think a good example. I don't want to say examples.
Ken Jack's licking his chops to draft Babylon. He cannot wait.
It's on my list. I can't. I'm not going to lie.
Example. That is a good example.
I went back and I didn't finish it, but I watched the first half. And
you didn't finish it. No, you can't. No retroactive stick-sucking Babylon if you only couldn't get through the full fucking movie and it's 3-hour runtime.
Dude, I can't call it bad.
It only took good 6 watches to get through it. It's great.
It's pretty good if you don't watch it as a movie and you watch it as a 2-part miniseries.
That scene on set got me fired up. I mean, that's like that's one of the best scenes of the past like 5 years. That was so awesome.
Diamond in a turd.
Speaking of turds, by the way, 65 stinks. We're not.
Oh, yeah, no.
Has anyone seen it?
No.
No, I just saw the reviews of it. It's pretty bad.
Movie sucks ass.
Apparently,
we're doing Scream this week. 65 sucks. It's a movie.
That stinks, man.
Sucks.
I really wanted that to be good and to be like the revival of dinosaur movies outside of the Jurassic World.
They're great methodical creatures.
Oh,
you methodical creature.
We're not doing that. We're not letting us do that.
That was very funny.
The one, Chris got the one lick in, then we're moving on. all right, let's get into it. We have a lot to get to today. Don't want to have like a 4-hour episode, though. It's the Oscars. I feel like we have an excuse to go a little longer. Let's just start off the top, though, with The Little Mermaid. Yeah. It's really the only news trailer, news item, or anything. You know, it's just – so they so they did. They did two weird. We'll talk about the Warner Brothers thing when we talk about the Oscars. That was fucking weird. very, very, very weird. The Warner Brothers thing was one of the weirdest things I've ever seen during the Oscars, and that includes the Will Smith slap. Melissa McCarthy and Halle Bailey, they came up on stage and they introduced the Little Mermaid trailer, which was fucking weird. So again,
really weird.
It's ABC Disney, so whatever. Like yeah. It's not like that crazy. That trailer, man, oh man, dude, tough,
bad, big stinker.
Like, this has nothing to do with Halle, because a lot of people are already writing it off because like Halle Bailey's black Correct. And Ariel can't be black. But this has nothing to do with that. It looks terrible. Like the color grading. Like if I notice bad CGI, that's when you have an issue. Like it looks terrible.
I think the color grading is worse than that. Like. The bad CGI, I feel like in the end, you're like, whatever, it's fish talking. But the color grading, it looks so bland.
Someone said to me, they're like, do you think this is like an issue with water? Because like Aquaman also had terrible CGI. But I'll defend Aquaman because it was very colorful. Like that shit was bright. Like that was a very fun color palette. This is, it's a children's movie. Where's the color?
I will say that the one positive coming out of that trailer, because it just looked bad, real bad, as far as just like the visual style of it. But the singing of Halle Bailey sounded amazing. Like she's a really good singer, and like that's the big positive. I'm sure the soundtrack for this is going to go crazy, but like that, man, dude, they're the biggest like media conglomerate in the fucking planet, and they can't figure out a consistent CGI like that. It seems like it should be the easiest thing. Like you're doing some indie thing and you're trying to make a big project. Like you should be struggling to get CGI to work. But fuck, man. You have like infinite reserves of money. Figure it out. Like buy every studio that exists and have them work for you. Christ.
Or just don't make the movie. Cause like who gives a shit?
No, because it's gonna make money even if it looked like absolute dog shit.
Visually, it looks like the inside of a toilet bowl. Like it is one of the most visually ugliest trailers. It's the reverse Avatar. So like and I'm with you, Gooch, because even I feel like in a certain way. The CG for this is set up to fail because it's coming like right off the backs of Way of Water. So it's like no matter what, it's going to kind of look weird. But it looks like a fake trailer, dude. I'm sorry. Like everything about it just seems so manufactured and phony and fake and lame. And my guess is that Melissa McCarthy and this Halle Bailey chick, they're probably going to be good in the movie. But oh God, this enough with these. Have any of them been – Jungle Book was good. Any of these live action Disney movies have been good.
Aladdin is the closest one to it, in my opinion. And like Jungle Cruise, even like that is the one opportunity they had to not use a lot of CGI, and they still used a ton of CGI.
I liked Beauty and the Beast.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
I like the songs from Beauty and the Beast more than anything.
Yeah. I really like Dan Stevens. I wish he was in more stuff.
Yeah. Mulan was shocking.
Literally, no one has ever said that until you just now. Ken Jack has said it.
He's great. Yes,
you're the only two people who like Dan Stevens.
Who you doesn't watched, like Dan Stevens? He's a great actor.
Legion. We've watched Legion.
He's insanely good in Legion.
Dude, he's really good. Like he's fantastic.
And what's that other one? He's in this really good horror movie.
He was good
too.
In Eurovision. He was fucking hilarious.
Dan Stevens.
Sorry, I'm hating on Dan Stevens. I don't know.
Really good.
It's just one of those trailers that just you can kind of tell. You can tell with Pinocchio. Different production value, though. Different production level, which actually kind of makes it fucking worse.
The Peter Pan movie looks better than this, and it's getting the Disney Plus release. I think it looks better. Like it, and I actually have more faith that it'll probably end up being better.
Well, it's a better director.
I don't trust Rob Marshall either.
Yeah.
The flounder fish. What did they do to him? He just looks like a fish, which, like, of course he does, but you know what I mean? Like, he just – it looks terrible. It looks like a little PS2 fish.
It's that uncanny valley where it's fake, but it looks fake. Like, not in a way where it's, like, acceptable, like, suspension of belief CGI.
Yeah, I'd rather him just be, like, super cartoony.
Right.
Like, Sonic the Hedgehog. Like
Rob Marshall did Chicago and then Memoirs of a Geisha and now just has this unlimited fucking – what are you showing us?
The fish.
Glorious screen.
Oh, yeah. It looks terrible.
Bad Flounder.
He did Chicago Memoirs of a Geisha. Now Rob Marshall's has this like then he did Pirates in the Caribbean, Stranger Tides, Into the Woods, oh, which was such a letdown. Mary Poppins Returns, which was like whatever.
Did he do Nine? I thought he did Nine.
He did Nine.
Yeah.
And now he's done The Little Mermaid. Yeah, that's tough. Ken Jack, you can also go on YouTube, go to Barstool Sports, check out Stool Scenes. You want to see Ken Jack and I at Disney World.
Mm-hmm.
Give us a quick top three rides at Disney World. First time in Disney, first time in your opinion change? I mean, not that you hated Disney World, but once you're there, you kind of get lost in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I never went because me and my brothers weren't like Disney. Like we don't fuck with Mickey. I still don't fuck with Mickey. I mean, don't tell him I said that. I still don't fuck with him or any of his rides or any of his little merch, any of that shit. But like, it's still like, we just never went for that reason, but like, it is super goddamn fun. And I think my rides order is by a massive gap, Guardians of the Galaxy. Number really? One. That was the coolest ride I've ever been in my life. That was by far. It was, it was the coolest roller coaster experience I've ever had in my entire goddamn life. And then after that would probably the Avatar, was it Flight of Passage? That was really cool. Them spraying all the smells in your air, in your face, like smelling dirt and seawater. Like,
yeah, we were, you're getting all the smell of the Kendrick, like, God, that Avatar Bidissi smell. He's like, let's fucking go.
The Bidissi smell of my Banshee was so crazy. And what's the, try to think of what number three would be. Try to think what the next craziest one, like, we did what, Big Thunder twice. That was a fun one.
Yep.
That was like a nice and easy OG. One. I like that one. Yeah, that was pretty fun.
Worst ride, though, before we move on.
Worst ride, Pirates of the Caribbean by far. That thing, what a creepy goddamn ride that is. Like the most uncanny valley ass robots that I've ever seen in my life. They're just sitting there and they're like 85% human looking, and just like that 15% just like really fucks with my head watching it. And it was just, you know, a slow ride looking for Jack Sparrow, I guess.
It's one of those, it's so fucking old, and when they released it, it was amazing. But now it's one of those things where they just keep it how it is because it was so amazing back then. They're supposed to be amazed at how amazing it was when it was released. And then there's just like a couple Jack Sparrow that look significantly newer throughout the ride.
Yeah.
And a Barbossa that always kind of looks like Barbossa. You're like, what?
Mm.
If you go to Disney and you go to Epcot, the Guardians of the Galaxy ride is fucking amazing. It's 3 minutes long too, which is long for Disney, and it hits you with a G at the end. It's fucking cool, and there's six different songs they give you, so you never know what song you're gonna. It was awesome. It was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Star Wars Land, very cool too.
You got Disco Inferno. That was cool. Oh, Rise of the Resistance might have been number three. That's number three, not Big Thunder. I forgot about Galaxy's Edge. I almost feel like it's a totally different part.
Ken Jack was banging on the doors with his Song of the South shirt on, saying, open up Splash Mountain.
What the fuck?
Come on. We did write off Space Mountain. Space Mountain and Disneyland, very good. The version in Disney World is, it's like someone throws an anvil on your back. It hurts so fucking bad. That ride needs to be fixed. So that's Disney. Check that out on Barstool Sports YouTube. The Last of Us and Mandalorian. We'll start with Mandalorian. That's right. You got a lightsaber. You got Qui-Gon's lightsaber.
Did you guys see the new one?
So heavy.
Yeah, they have like new
what the fuck?
Actual lightsabers.
The day after we leave, basically.
There was not enough of a pop for that in the crowd when they showed it.
That's fucking South by Southwest. So that's
they were like, it's like, what?
That's the craziest thing you've ever seen in your life.
They've been waiting on the technology for 50 years.
Yeah, they were updating their Twitter name to be at South at SXXW. So
they were
fucking busy for that. That was the new lightsabers are crazy. Last of Us and Mandalorian. I think Mandalorian we can go on quick. Mandalorian was just a fucking blast this past week. Another fun episode. Katie Sackhoff's great as Bo-Katan. We saw at the end the Mythosaur, which is not great if you have a lisp.
No, the Methodosaur.
That's the last time I'll be saying that. By the way, the big Mando beast.
Is that what it was? I don't know what that is. Can you explain
that's
that?
The symbol of Mandalore, man.
Oh, like, you know, okay.
Whenever that's you have like a bounty, a Mandalorian thing, it's like little horns.
I was like, damn, they got Cthulhu up in here,
which she doesn't really believe.
Cthulhu.
She doesn't really believe, like, that is why it's so shocking to Bo-Katan, because that's not a,
like she doesn't believe in like all like the mythology and like, you know, like, you know, her takes her helmet off. She's like, you guys are fucking weirdos. We've talked about that, by the way. Din Djarin is still a fucking freak. Like he's still like a mm-hmm. weirdo religious freak.
Yep. That's the funniest thing. That's why I don't like him saying the dad puns. Like, that's using your head. It's like, dude, he's a religious psychopath cultist. Like, come on, man.
He's becoming a soft. He's accepting his role as a father, and that's where the dad jokes are coming in. You know,
I don't think you'd call him a softy if he's traveling to a dead poison planet with his child to bathe in the lake, the waters of Lake Minnetonka or whatever. Like, you're not a softy. I'm sorry.
Mandalorian has to always know where he is. Get a known map. This is what a map looks like. Right there, that's a moon. Yeah.
Teaching him how to use a map.
Good though. I don't think anyone had any complaints, right? Pretty
the I did think one thing, and I think it might have just been because you guys were at Disney, but when Grogu's like escaping from the mines to go get Bo-Katan, that was like a straight up Disney ride. Like, I'll be shocked mm-hmm. if something like that doesn't end up at a Disney park when he's like going through little like tunnels.
Those creatures were cool.
Things
too.
Things were popping up out of
abominable snowman. Yeah. The abominable snowman things were sick. That was a cool new
what
creature.
Was that? You guys might know the robo, like the one eyed like robo creature.
I have no clue. Brand it was new. Really cool though.
Okay,
really cool creature.
Yeah, that was it was like something out of like a Guillermo del Toro movie. Very
yeah. It had like a little Grievous to it too. The way it walked and everything, that was kind of cool. How much would that take you out of this show if that had just been like General Grievous reincarnated? I was thinking that in my head for a minute. Like I was like, what could they have done there? That would have been the worst.
No.
Yeah, no thank
just
you.
Just no.
Big crab monster.
Also, Din Djarin, he's just not a good fighter. Let's call it what it is. He gets rocked every single time. Like, he's just getting his shit rocked.
I did like him. I don't know if it was supposed to be like a purposeful shout out, but it did look very similar to the Return of the Jedi scene when they're getting all bound up by the Ewoks and they're just sitting there just like, please help me.
Yeah.
Like, that was kind of cool.
Yeah. No, good. Excited for the next one. No idea where it's going to go. I mean, I think we know it's going to be the siege and them taking Mandalore, but very excited. The myths are obviously going to be the big next step in this show. Also, the cave beast, very cool. Last of Us. Let's give a grade on Last of Us here. Last of Us finale. We'll start with the video game boys, and we'll go to myself and Chris. Ken Jack. Last of Us wraps up. First season in the books. Kind of crazy. Mando here. Well, Succession in a few weeks. Very excited to start talking Succession. What do you give a final grade? So we'll throw a number grade on it. What do you give the Last of Us season one?
I would give it like a, I don't know, like 9.5 out of 10, like 95 out of 100. Really, really like the season. There's only like one episode that I think I even had remotely a problem with, and again, it's all relative, and it's the flashback one, because I felt like that, like they had developed the character of Ellie like fair enough at that point where they didn't need a full episode break on it. But either way, I think that finale was awesome. It did the actual finale of the game justice. It was great. And I would recommend, if you haven't played the game before, just pay attention to everything that happened in that episode, because it is important in the next season. So just make sure you like clue in on everything. Great. I think they did a good job showing like that dark side of Joel. That's like, I will do, you mess with my queen, God forbid you, I will raise hell. Like one of those shirts, you know what I mean?
Yes.
God forbid you disrespect my queen. I loved seeing that side of Joel in live action. And it was just sick. They did an awesome job this entire season, I think, with both the doing justice to the characters and giving this like a production value that it deserves. Because like doing post-apocalypse is like, either it looks like dog shit or great. Like either you're doing 28 Days Later where you actually shut down the entirety of like a section of London to show that it's real and like fucking like looks like an actual real apocalypse, or you're gonna look like some dog shit like Army of the Dead or whatever. So like, I like how real it looked. I really appreciated that about this show and how they recreated so many great moments of the game, including the giraffe moment, which is always big in the game too. That was really sick. So big fan.
I'd probably come in at like a 8.5, 9 out of 10. It really was like textbook. Like, I could see, you know, filmmakers, showrunners in the future, they're looking to adapt something, especially in like the video game world. This is the blueprint. Like, you pay homage to the source material and you respect the source material, but you make it your own. They didn't waste time. I see some people complaining like, They didn't waste time doing the loots, like, you know, sneaking around looting. It's like, that doesn't work in a TV show. You would get bored. They do that twice, you'd be bored to death of them, like, scrounging shit together to build. I would have liked to see more action through the season. Maybe just a few more clickers.
Yeah, I'd be agree with that.
It's a cool creature. It's something, you know, you'd want to see more of. But I could see them, you know, leaning harder into it next season. They've said that they're going to deviate quite a bit from The Last of Us Part 2. So interested to see how that turns out. But outside of that, I mean, this was a fantastic season of television early in the year. I thought Pedro Pascal nailed it. He's perfect, Joel. I mean, that's a perfect casting. Ellie came into her own, start out maybe a little rocky. Maybe people didn't know if she's going to be right for it or not. And then I think she pretty much shut everybody up the last two episodes. Like, she has made Ellie her own character. And it's awesome. I mean, him going through that hospital scene and just mowing down people was so fucking cool. So cool.
Yeah, I loved it. Really good show. 90s for me. I mean, we don't really rate TV, but I'd say 94-ish. It's that good. It maybe had like one little lull and dip, and even its lulls and dips were very fucking good. So not much more to tack on than that. I think the castings were probably the best thing that they did in the lead roles. And then that it is kind of, it's one of those things where you almost don't recognize it enough, where like if the castings were better, that could have been one of the worst fucking shows. Like, it's just nothing worse than a bad kid and or young person and adult dynamic in a movie or TV show. What's the movie with, not that it's bad, what's the movie with, what was the recent, like, hasn't Dave Bautista done like five movies where he's like the adult and then there's just like a kid sidekick?
Stuber was with Kumail Nanjiani, right?
My Spy.
I like My Spy. It wasn't terrible.
Yeah, I'm just trying to rack in my brain like recent like adult and kid pairings. But yeah, no, it was awesome. The Last of Us lived up to the hype. It's probably the best video. It's probably the best video game adaptation of anything ever. And it's like kind of not even close. Sorry, Dwayne Johnson. It's no longer Rampage.
Hey, he can hit it 500 off the tee, though. Can Pedro Pascal do that?
Don't forget. I remember I did that. I went to the driving range and I recreated that exact Instagram. And I don't think anyone got it, but it was just for me. But sometimes you got to make yourself laugh with a Dwayne The Rock Johnson Instagram reference.
Sometimes you do. Chris, final score on The Last of Us. Final thoughts as we wrap it up.
I don't know, like 85. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I'll be real. I'm not actually. This is unsurprising. I wasn't crazy about the finale. I really expected them to do like pull a Mandalorian and, you know, and kind of knock it out of the park. I do think the show has run into a little bit of the issue that I was worried it would run into, which is, man, it's a lot of fucking walking and talking. I really think by the time we get to season two, I'm with you. Like, there needs to be a much greater focus on the clickers and the action, because I felt like this probably could have been closer to 7 or 8 episodes as opposed to 9. But there's, for the record, there's nothing bad. Like, I enjoy the show a whole lot. I'm very excited to see where it goes. Like, I think it has potential to be even better because they got the most basic parts right. I really like these characters and I love these performances. But I do feel like the front half of the season was better than the back half of the season.
They also, I'm excited to see them take the next season and deviate from the game. I think they have the right team for that too. I just trust Craig Mazin. Like, it's just one of those things where, like, if they're going to deviate from a game, which also is kind of divisive by all accounts, again, have not played it, but I do know the kind of backstory around
I'm game. Tempted to go pick it up and play it. I don't know. I'd like to see what people hate so much about it. Like, the people who do dislike it.
Last of Us 2?
Yeah, the people who do dislike it. Is it gameplay related or is it?
No, gameplay is awesome, if not improved from the first one, if you ask me.
Then I kind of want to play it even more now.
There's story choices, some of which are like Gamergate type complaints, which are like not real. And then the other ones are like, more legitimate. I don't know. I like the game a lot, the second one. It was significantly like people act like it was gonna be the biggest piece of dog shit ever, like based on the reviews and everything, and then I got it and I was like, this is fun, this is like a longer version of the first game that has better actual gameplay.
Long, I don't know about that. Then I can't do long games anymore.
It's a long ass game.
That is The Last of Us.
This episode brought to you by Rocket Money. That's right, Rocket Money, which we have talked about for a long ass time, and I use Rocket Money quite frequently. It used to be called Truebill, a personal finance app that helps find and cancel your unwanted subscriptions, monitor your spending, helps lower your bills, all that and more. With Rocket Money, you can quickly identify and cancel all of those things that you're paying for that you do not want. I just found out because of Rocket Money, I was paying for a fucking subscription to the Los Angeles Times. The LA Times. I was paying like 15 bucks a month or some nonsense. Over 80% of people have subscriptions they forget about. Could be a streaming service. Could be something like going and paying for the LA Times. I don't know why I was doing that. But Rocket Money, help me identify it. Help me get rid of it. Help me cancel it automatically. They let you know when a big charge is coming up as well. Maybe you want to get rid of something for the time being. Stop throwing away your money. Cancel unwanted subscriptions and manage your expenses the easy way by going to Rocket Money, RocketMoney.com/lights. That's RocketMoney.com/lights. RocketMoney.com/lights. Next up, Scream 6. Which I'm definitely going to start with Ken Jack here because I don't know if Ken Jack despises it. He's the last to see it out of the four of us. Scream 6. Which is now it makes me hate the fact that Scream 5 is just Scream.
Scream.
Yeah.
Well, retroactively slap a 5 on it. Four survivors of the Ghostface murders leave Woodsboro behind for a fresh start in New York City. However, they soon find themselves in a fight for their lives when a new killer embarks on a bloody rampage. Many returning people from the last movies. Melissa Barrera is back, but I thought she was kind of better in this movie than the previous one.
Way better. If the Oscars invented a most improved player award like the NBA, I think she takes it home.
Yeah. Jenna Ortega back. She was good. She was fine. Courtney Cox, Hayden Panettiere, Skeet Ulrich.
That motherfucker.
Some visions and flashbacks. I just like saying Skeet Ulrich. But then a lot of the same kids. Or teens that we recognize from the last movie. Also, we see some.
Guess what Skeet Ulrich's real name is? Brian Ray Trout. What a bitch. What a bitch changed his name to Skeet Ulrich, and his name is Brian Trout.
That remains a large part of the story, obviously, that Sam is the daughter of Billy Loomis. Well, I'll start with Ken Jack. Ken Jack, did you hate this movie?
I hate is a strong word because there are so many horror movies that get released every single year that are unwatchably bad, and this isn't even close to that level of bad. It is just not good, and it is not as good as Scream 5 or Scream 1, and it is – I think it committed the cardinal sin of horror movies – which is it ran way too long.
Oh my
god. No horror movie.
Holy fuck.
No horror movie should be 2 hours long. Not a single horror movie on the planet deserves to be that long. And this one is 2 hours long, very self-indulgent on a lot of their shit, where it's just like, I think with horror movies especially, and especially with like dumb franchise ones like these, you have to do like basically adhere to the KISS, right? Keep it simple, stupid. Way too convoluted, way too like assumptuous of that, like the entirety of every audience is like keyed into every element of Scream, which they're not. A lot of people just go to horror movies because it's like a fun time, like, and that's why they make a shit ton of money. And just like, I don't know, nothing about this movie was like hyper impressive outside of like the kills look cool. They were hyper violent. Yeah, awesome. Some of the other reveals, like that cop was, spoiler alert, the cop was always the bad guy. That was the most obvious fucking thing of all time, as was that other kid. But other than that, like, Barrera, I don't see it. She can't act with her eyes, which is like a similar problem that other actors overcome, like Oscar Isaac. It just, she didn't impress me. Ortega was just kind of there, which is, I think, maybe more disappointing since she's become a bigger star. The rest of the supporting cast may as well have not existed. And just, I don't know. It's a movie that I would not recommend to anyone that is not a big fan of Scream. You know what I mean? Like there's franchise movies like you could say that like with Halloween, like the first Halloween movie, like I could recommend that to anyone. You don't need to have seen the first, like the OG Halloween or whatever to enjoy that, or other late horror franchise sequels where it's just like, hey, look, you don't need to be super keyed into this to get everything. You need to be keyed into Scream to, like, I think fully appreciate Scream 6. So I ended up with like a 55 out of 100 on this. Not a big fan. And just, I don't know. It was kind of a bummer. Cause like I was, so yesterday, like you were saying, I watched it yesterday and I was just like, oh, nice. I get to do a little, I don't know, not turn off your brain. It's because it's all meta and all that, but like a nice little enjoyable horror movie. I'm sitting there for two hours and change watching these people talk about Billy Loomis for 2 hours of like lore building. I'm like, I don't care. Show somebody killing someone. I don't know, man. Big time bummer. Or I guess not really a big time bummer because I'm not a big Scream guy regardless, but still was not a fan. 55 out of 100 for me.
We'll prep the spoilers a little bit now you said it. You also definitely have to very much care about Richie, who was played by Jack Quaid in the last movie. There are just certain things you just kind of have to care about in order for it to be like to land for you, right? Also, I know the LCB Discord, some people were surprised to see the character Ethan was played by Spider from Avatar. I think some people didn't fully realize that. Which also, he's the kid on the bike.
Did not know that.
In Avengers Endgame that drives by Scott Lang when Scott Lang comes out of the quantum realm. Then the kid really? That kind of looks like, what the fuck are you looking at, idiot? Like that kid. So he's just been in – he's the new Zoe Saldana. Been in Avengers Endgame and Avatar The Way of Water. Give him his credit. Yeah, I don't know. I didn't really hate it. I do think I kind of fuck with the idea that it was just a mess of Ghostface, right? Like I kind of like that. I kind of like the setup for it. It does dive in like a lot into, which that's kind of always Scream though, into like the lore and into, you know, honoring the past, you know, the killers and so on and so forth, which I enjoy to an extent, though there was a little part of me that wished they would have detached more because I kind of thought that was what we were going to get with now being in New York. But it is, it's very much tied to the past, which I'm not saying I'm shocked by it because we saw
it. 100%. I think like almost borderline unenjoyable if you do not know everything that is tied into the past.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree. I liked it. I enjoyed it. Like I had a good time with it. I'm not a run – like the runtime didn't really bother me. I liked it a hair more than the last one. I thought I was about to love this because a couple people who I know who I trust a lot with their opinions, not that I don't trust them anymore, they said it was fucking great. And I was like, oh, shit, this could be like in the 80s below Scream. I don't love Scream 4, but I know some people like Scream 4. I give it a 74. I thought it was very passable. Very passable, like enjoyable, fun movie for what it is.
You think it's better than the Scream 5?
I kind of wish like they would have just gone. Sorry, say it again.
So you like it better than Scream 5. You have that.
I still enjoyed it better than Scream 5, yeah. There was parts of Scream 5 crazy. That I just didn't love. And I thought the acting in Scream 5 was way worse.
I think the acting was, I think, like almost a push, if anything. And like the fact that it was, I don't know. Maybe it's the fact that it was a reset in Scream 5, right? Made it a little bit easier to like get that detached part. But like, then like they were a little bit more trying to get people into it. So it was like a, I don't know how to explain it, like a slow gradient into getting people back into like the Scream lore world. But like this one was just like, hey, you don't get it. Fuck you. Like you're out of here.
I did still have the fun I was looking for in this though. Like I still had that element. But again, I hope, because they're going to be another one, I hope they really detach, but I don't think they will. No. I don't think they're going to.
No way.
I think it's going to be just more and more about how Billy Loomis is her. Like, she's clearly going to become some sort of like, I think she'll become like a straight up killer. We'll see. I still enjoyed it. Like, I don't think it was awful, but it's odd to say that because like, I like it so much more than you, Ken Jack, but I also kind of thought it was going to be better than this too, just the way some people were talking
Me
about
too.
It.
Me too.
Chris,
the hype for it was like out there big time.
Chris, where do you land on Scream 6?
I'm in between you guys. I'm at a 70. I guess I probably liked it more than you guys did, though. I was very indifferent towards the last one. I thought it was okay. I thought it was serviceable, fine. I feel the same way about this one. I'm in a weird way almost more disappointed, though, because I really like the first half of this. I think that this movie and this series gets right what a lot of horror movies don't, which is that the characters aren't idiots. And I think especially now that the characters are adults, like I like the core four. I thought that they were good together. But the problem is, yeah, I'm with you. I'm usually the guy who always complains about runtimes, and I'm trying to be better with that. But like by ending number seven of this movie, I'm just like, Jesus, can we get on with it, please? And yeah, twist was relatively predictable. Its biggest issue is just that it runs too long. I don't really have anything like beyond that that's overly critical. So I mean, as somebody who's not a huge fan of these movies, of just this genre in general, I think Scream is the best of them. It's fine. It's good. It's okay. I legitimately really like the very tail ending, and like am intrigued by what they might set up with Melissa Barrera's character.
Where do you think it's like? Are you cool though with them leaning super heavy into like the whole Loomis side of things, or do you hope that she becomes true like her own entity? Because that's kind of where I hope. Because I agree with you.
I prefer she becomes her own entity. Because I think, and we've talked about this before, I think the ultimate end goal of this is that Jenna Ortega becomes the main character. Like it just seems to make sense. So I feel like the idea of making Melissa Barrera the antagonist at some point in these movies is actually. I don't know. It's kind of it's something you rarely see. I feel like in a lot of these slasher movies,
they're gonna do the fucking line. It's just Barrera's gonna be like, "I became the monster they thought I was," or something like that. It's the most predictable bullshit that's ever existed.
Yeah. Gooch is gonna get up and leave the theater now if they say that line, because he's gonna be like, "God damn it, Ken Jeffries."
You know they are. Like the second I said that, you knew that was gonna happen.
I'll stand up.
I am the ghost face,
and that's how I became Scream 7.
She's going to look into the camera and she's going to say, "What's your favorite scary movie?"
Gooch.
Oh my gosh. You guys are idiots. This movie
gave it a 95.
Wow.
No, I'm just kidding.
I gave it an 80. So I am higher than you on. Makes I probably sense. Liked it more than you all. Yeah, but probably. In defense of my score and kind of corroborating Ken Jack's point, I am a massive fan of Scream. Like Scream is my Scream is my favorite horror movie of all time. I think it's not heavy on the gore, which I'm a big fan of because I'm a little bitch. but it's very smart, intellectual. It's funny. I love that movie. I think Melissa Barrera was great in this. Like I think the way they wrote her compared to five wasn't impressive. They gave her a ton more to work with. Well, I don't think she's like great at acting with her face. I think she's a very physical actress. Like she's tall, she's big, she's pretty. Like at the very end, when she's wearing that white tank and she's covered in blood, she looks like a bloody Lara Croft. Like she looks awesome. Like, I thought her performance was great. The Jenna Ortega stuff, my opinion on it is they did get a little sidetracked with her character and probably put in some stuff they shouldn't have. But I think that what happened was they shot a bunch of scenes they probably weren't going to use and they wouldn't have used if Jenna Ortega hadn't blown up the way she did this past year. And once she did, they said, let's use these scenes anyway. Yeah. Which, you know, you got to do what you got to do to sell the movie. And Jenna Ortega had probably the line of the movie when she stabs Jack Champion or whatever his name is. And she's like, now die a virgin. Yeah, die a virgin. That was sick. I'm also an idiot. I thought Kirby was the killer up until like the very end, until the cop makes the call and he's like, She's gone off the grid. And I was like, oh, no, he's the bad guy. And that's when I figured it out.
The second the cop was sitting there with and like they took his car, I was like, oh, so he's a bad guy. Like it just like it felt like the most obvious thing, especially after they blamed her. It's like she's one of the old legacy dudes. Like, no, I don't know.
They also I kind of wish they would get back to Ghostface being kind of a bumbling idiot, like being able to be taken out by like fridge doors and stuff, like just kind of tripping over himself all the time.
He was outrunning bullets. Outrunning bullets. He was fucking Neo.
He was a little too athletic. All three, I guess, ghost faces were just a little too trained, if you know what I mean. Like
for a like you gotta be a 55-year-old man, a like 18-year-old kid, and like a 18-year-old girl. Like it is you're acting like fucking Usain Bolt.
I know, yeah. That's the double knife swipe though. That was sick. Come on. When they stand up and they both swipe it in unison, that was so over the top but awesome.
When they stabbed Chad, I thought that part was really cool. When he's just sitting there just kind of like murked. That was fucking cool.
You can't stab him like that and then not have him die, or at least have him in the hospital at the end of the movie, like in a coma. Like you can't just be awake, like going like core four, like after being stabbed. Yeah. Like, like 20 times. He was the MGK of stabbing.
Yeah.
Do you eat up the TV kill?
55 times.
As a fan?
What?
Do you eat up the TV kill as a fan?
Oh, yeah. And when I saw the TV, I was like, oh, shit, is Stu going to be in this? Because I thought there was a chance
Stu could. I did too, but we talked about that when the trailer came out. I was like, this fucking makes sense that Stu's going to be here.
I think Stu comes back next time.
Probably.
I think Stu comes back next time, and that kind of pushes that Billy Loomis storyline forward. Which, by the way, another thing I don't like. I did really like this movie, but we got to stop with the Billy Loomis visions. The visions? Weird.
Those are bad.
I don't like them at all. Like, they're just so
shit. Come on. Skeet, gotta get Skeet paid.
There's another way to do it that like isn't that like just I don't know. Do it.
Here's the other big question for you as a big Scream fan: what happens if they go and they pay and they bring Sydney Prescott back? Like, do you think she's done?
I would have liked to see her in this movie, but as like she stops by New York City, she tells them like maybe what to expect, or like, you know, sends her wishes with them. Like,
I appreciate the way they explained it off. By the way.
I mean,
yeah,
which is like, yeah, she's going upstate. She's scared.
The reality is we didn't want to pay our actress, the king of our franchise. We didn't want to pay her money. That's why she didn't yet show up in this.
Yeah, like the sixth time she's just not into it anymore. She's just terrified. Now she just
randomly just decided she's out.
I mean, how much could she have been asking for?
Like, what's the number?
Probably a reasonable amount of money. Probably pretty reasonable.
It was probably for just the scene.
$950 mil.
Because the movie is clearly written for Melissa Brea and Jenna Ortega to take over the franchise. So I can't imagine Sydney would have been like an integral part of the story. Like, she probably would have stopped by for a scene, which I would have liked to have seen. Like, I would have loved that. But yeah, hopefully they bring her back next time. And I hope it stays in New York City, because I really like the New York City setting. Like, the scene on the subway, I took the one home right after that, too. So I was like, kind of like looking around.
That was cool.
All the different people dressed up for the Halloween setting was cool. Like, you had somebody dressed up as the Babadook. I don't know if you saw it. Someone was dressed up as Samara Weaving's character from Ready or Not in the train, which was a nice little nod. I like that opening with Samara Weaving, by the way. That was pretty cool. And old Flash Thompson, whatever his name is, the actor.
Tony Revolari.
Tony.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Him opening up the fridge and the body being chopped up. That was gory as hell. That was metal.
I had fun with it. I think obviously Gooch, the big fan, gives it an 80. Chris, 70. Myself, 74. I mean, I enjoyed it. It's definitely worth seeing. I'll tell you what. If you're picking between Scream or 65, Kendrick gave it a 65. Don't go see.
Well, yeah, you pick between a giant pile of shit or a tinier pile of shit. Which one are you going to eat? Yeah, pick the tinier one.
65? I thought six, by the way.
There's other movies out that are good besides 65, I'm sure.
65 was starting to get, not Megan treatment, but 65 was starting to go kind of viral in some weird spots. Like, it was popping up, like, look at this new dinosaur movie with Adam Driver. And I was like, oh, shit, is 65 going to get this social media campaign? And no, the movie sucks ass.
Apparently, They don't talk to each other. Apparently, him and that girl, like, there's something where they can't speak to each other. So, like, they're just no talking.
Movie sucks. It's like,
wait, you saw it?
We'll talk about it. I have a theory that the producers of Jurassic Park just found a way to make a shitty dinosaur movie to get people to like that movie more.
Yeah, nice.
Dinosaur theory.
I like that.
So... that's it. It's draft time. We'll in the canon of this show, we'll have already done our Oscars talk. But now we will do our Oscars drafts. We'll bring Kirk back in for that. This show sponsored by BetterHelp. That's right. Getting to know yourself can be a lifelong process, especially because, you know, we're always growing and changing. Needs in the realm of whether it be therapy or talking to somebody change, not just year to year, but day to day. I'm turning 32 next. No, and this week. Turning 32 this week, and, you know, what I need to help my mind, different than it might have been a year ago, 5 years ago. Therapy is all about deepening your self-awareness and understanding. Sometimes we don't know what we want or why we react to certain things until we talk things through, and talking things through is very important. We've used BetterHelp. BetterHelp is a great way to easily find someone to talk to. You get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch it anytime you want. No additional charge. You don't have to go. That's a big thing. It's a bad excuse. Someone who's used the excuse before, not physically going to therapy is a bad excuse. Guess what? BetterHelp cuts that excuse out.
You can just do it online. You can do a chat. You can do a video call, a phone call. It gives you so many endless options. Discover your potential with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/lights today. Get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp. BetterHelp. H-E-L-P. H-E-L-P. I can't spell. I need spelling help. .com/lights. Well, let's talk about some bad Oscar movies. Oscar bait draft. We're going to talk about movies that had hype, maybe going into the year, were built to be Oscar winners. It can have won an Oscar. Like if it won like a technical award, it doesn't count. Like that's absolutely fine. But it didn't win any of the big awards. Maybe had hype beginning of the year. Maybe even got nominated, but was kind of a stinker. And you're like, how did this get nominated? We'll start. We'll go. Kirk, what do you want to? Well, we'll let you pick. You want pick one through five. Which pick do you want?
How many picks are we doing out of curiosity?
We'll do five each.
Five each. Okay. So what am I? What are you saying? I can go when or where?
Should we do five or four each? Is there enough to do five, you think?
Let's do four. I think with five people, it might be tough.
Four. Okay.
Let's do four. We'll do four each. Yeah.
Good okay. Call. So what are you asking me if I'm picking first or what did you say?
Yeah. Which pick do you want? One through
I'll
five.
I'll go first. Why not?
Okay. Well, if Kirk go first, then we'll do Chris, Ken Jakuch. I'll go last.
Okay. So I'm up.
Yep.
Okay. So this is like the latest, I think, of this group that always, almost always, has enormous hype, enormous fan base, and always fails almost completely. So Dear Evan Hansen is going to be the latest
nice.
One in this category.
Oh my God. Nice.
Oh my God. Wow.
Absolute music. They casted a guy who I think went to high school with Jerry Thornton. The guy who played him, obviously this guy who played him on Broadway. I don't remember. What's the gentleman's name?
Ben Platt, right?
Yeah. Ben Platt, who I think like literally was one of the guys who made sure like Satchel Paige got in the Hall of Fame in like 1980. So, you know, obviously like huge, great play, all that stuff. I understand that. The minute you saw the trailer, you're like, oh my God, this feels like a parody of a trailer trying to get people, you know, totally miscast. So dumb. You had Julianne Moore in it. Amy Adams was in it. You know, this felt like you guys might have other examples within this genre, but this happens all the time. I mean, I can list eight of them right now in the last 25 years where a huge beloved Broadway blockbuster goes to the big screen and totally and completely fails. That came out. You guys can look it up because I'm pretty sure about this. It came out about the same time as that wretched Sopranos movie.
Many Saints, Newark. Yeah, around there. Was, I think one was September, one was October. Yeah.
So I went to see open that with my brother Ryan, the Many Saints, Newark. And in the next theater, we were in Maine. We were doing a live show the next day. In the theater next to us was Dear Evan Hansen. And I looked at him. I was like, we got to go in for a couple minutes. And we went in and it was like walking. And I, you know, it was like walking into a, like the funeral of like a child or something. It was just,
oh my God.
Even the people there were just like, why are we here? And all of a sudden the kid started singing and he looks unbelievable. So to me, that would be the first pick. Now I could have picked, like I said, six others there, but since it's sort of the most recent. I'm going to go with Dear Evan.
We talked about this on the review. Nobody was more damp than Ben Platt during that movie. I don't know if they thought it made him look younger, but he was just looked soaking wet in that whole movie.
He looked like he'd been in like that thing that Luke Skywalker was in when they were fixing his hand or whatever. Like, and they just threw him out of it. He just looked, you're right. Like, he looked like he was always getting out of a shower.
he looks like Paul Dano in all his early roles. He would just looked moist. That's a really good pick. You know, I was thinking though, after watching that movie and from what I'd heard, I've heard a lot of people say the play kind of stinks too.
I don't know. I like
Dear Evan Hansen. I like the music too, but I mean,
wasn't his dad was a producer on the original Broadway production, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that was another big reason why people hated the casting was there was a nepotism element.
Okay. Gooch, Chris, let's say Gooch or Chris next.
I thought you said me.
Then
Chris.
Me, then
yeah,
Chris.
Yeah. Fire away.
All right. Yeah, there's a lot here. Oh, man. Wow. There's a lot of good ones here. I'm going to go with a movie that's probably not great in terms of value because I feel like it probably would have fallen. But I know I say that X movie is the worst movie ever very often. Okay, but like more often than not, I'm being facetious. When I mean it, though, I think Music by Sia is one of the piles of dog shit like ever. It was now, ironically, it got nominated for 2 Golden Globes, which is just like holy shit, including classic Best Picture.
That's so classic Globes.
Even by their standards, because they nominated like fucking Burlesque and shit. But even by their standards, that's rough. I mean, it's bad. It's one of those movies that is bad for all the reasons you'd think it'd be bad. I completely forgot until a friend of mine reminded me that like there's an AIDS subplot in the last third that gets like comes out of nowhere. Just a rotten movie made by a pop star's head got way too fucking.
And then her deep. Twitter responses too, and people are like, "Why didn't you cast someone who's autistic for the role?" And she's like, "Did you consider that autistic people are bad actors?" It's like maybe a tweet you keep in your back pocket forever. Maybe that's one you don't send.
Yeah, if you're gonna cast somebody to play an autistic, well, I think it was a teenager in the movie. Like, you have to think more outside the box than the person who was in the chandelier video. Like,
it's just it's so
bizarre decisions.
I'm not one to be like, oh, that movie is offensive. I remember we talked. Kind of got offended by that movie. Like it's the
closest I've gotten. Yeah, for sure.
It's one of the most out of touch productions I've ever seen with a movie. Bananas. Yeah, that's a good pick. Music. Gooch.
I'm gonna go back to Broadway, piggybacking off Kirk's pick.
I think I knew.
This movie got shit on endlessly and it deserved it. Cats.
Yeah. Cats,
and you can tell a movie is pushing for Oscar buzz or big buzz by how early they dropped the trailer. That trailer was dropped like 8 months, 10 months before the movie came out. Immediately got shit on. They said they were fixing the cat CGI. They didn't fix the cat CGI. Those cats still had buttholes. Unbelievable. They were going for technical awards. They were going for music awards. They were going for acting awards. They had Dame Judi Dench in there. Idris Elba. Beautiful voices. Jennifer Hudson. Like, none of it worked. It's one of those plays. People said it wouldn't work. I was like, well, maybe they'll figure it out. Tom Hooper. Good director. I don't love Les Mis, solid movie. And it just stunk.
Terrible.
Bad, bad movie. Bad. No, it's not even bad enough to be funny. It's just like, you can look at screen cats and laugh. Like, you can look at like little screenshots and be like, wow, that looks really fucking stupid. But as a movie, there's no scenes that actually make you laugh.
I watched that for the first time with a friend of mine, like during COVID, thinking, oh, this will be like, we can just laugh at it and shit. It's not, it's too fascinating to just laugh at in a weird way, where it's every creative decision is so baffling that it's a movie I would actually recommend you watch once in your life just to see like every creative decision. I think
Taylor Swift didn't even fucking advertise the movie when it was coming out. That's how she knew it was bad. She didn't do a single interview of press for that.
What happens is every five or six of these, like Les Mis, made a lot of money, won an Oscar, a couple of Oscars, I think. And so they think we can forget the four or five horrific ones before and keep making them. And like, this is why Hollywood just not a lot of sabermetrics involved. So then, you know, the last four or five, but they'll just keep rolling them out. And eventually one will hit again and they'll think, oh, this works. And they'll make four or five more. It just doesn't, like, you know, if you're in a live theater, that just doesn't translate 95 times out of 100 to a movie. A movie is a different medium, but they haven't figured that out. When they have a piece of, you know, intellectual property, they'll do whatever they can.
Yeah, the funny thing too is Les Mis almost got derailed because Russell Crowe had no idea how to sing. And it was just not a good thing. He was so bad. It was hysterical.
That was funny though. That's like one of those things you watch and it is funny while you're watching. Like Russell Crowe
watching Pierce Brosnan singing Mamma Mia. That was also very funny.
Mamma Mia.
Yes. And then he had to switch to a reprise in the second one because like, yeah, we don't need any more of that.
There's a clip on YouTube right now that's been out there for a while where Pierce Brosnan's being interviewed by a kid, a younger guy, not a kid, but he's in his 20s, who grew up in the same small town as he did in Ireland. Have you seen this?
Yeah.
Pierce Brosnan kind of wells up. I'd say I've watched that video 840 times the last 3 months. I don't know why. It just hits me in the right spot. He gets very emotional. He's got that great brogue. I love Pierce Brosnan. I love that video. I love that video.
Still looks so good. It's incredible. Especially when he has that beard going. Good Lord.
Great, I'm up.
I'm gonna pick, I think it's a fairly easy one for me. Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close. They made 9/11 movie, tried to make a drama around it, and movie sucked ass. They got Tom Hanks in it, America's Dad. They were like, oh, this is gonna be fire, it's gonna get every nomination, it's gonna get everything. And I think it got nominated for Best Picture or something, but like, And people got pissed about it. And like, man, not a good movie at all. They were just like, that was like, I think not a heat check, but it was like a studio or whatever saying like, hey, I think enough time has passed where maybe we can capitalize on this whole 9/11 thing in a drama. And no, it wasn't very smart. And same thing with, but to a much lesser degree, what was the Robert Pattinson one? Remember me.
Also with Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah, is his dad?
Yes. The worst ending. The worst ending great ever. Ending.
That's such a great ending. I've watched it every once in a while. It's incredible.
Laugh out loud, funny.
It's the way they present it as a twist, too. Like that slow pan out. If we would have found out years later that it was some like like Andy Kaufman like performance piece just to see people get mad, like a Nathan Fielder bit, it would have been genius. Like, yeah, but they played.
I forget too. And Jeff, you fooled me on the dozen with this recently. The what's her name was in it too. I completely forgot that she was in it. In Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, not Sandra Bullock. I thought it was someone else. But yeah, just bad movie, no good. Would not recommend it to anybody. And was just very ill conceived. So Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close.
They also the trailer I think did. It had Where the Streets Have No Names. I don't know if that was like a I don't know if that was like a play on
Jesus.
Like the halftime show after the 9/11 Patriots Rams. Like, I don't know if they're just trying to like bring that back up, like that type of spirit. It was just, gross. Well, I'm going to get the movie that I've talked about a bunch with this draft. And that's Downsizing. Downsizing was it was going to be a darling at the Oscars. The idea was cool. The trailer was cool. Alexander Payne movie, Matt Damon, Kristen Wiig was kind of like really moving out of the SNL zone. Yeah. Christoph Waltz is in it. Like they were like Hong Chau's performance is great. Like it was a movie that was going to be hyped up, propped up. We're going to get this great movie. And Downsizing was so fucking bad. Did not do well at the box office. Just an unbelievable dud. After the Oscars, like IndieWire always puts out a list of movies that are going to be nominated next year. Favorites. Downsizing was on that list for so long, and then people saw it and they were like, "This is horrible. Movie's terrible."
Every year, there's that director who kind of is at his peak, or she are at their peak, and they make that one. I mean, it happened this past year when they kind of have that whiff, and that was that because I love Alexander Payne, and you know Damon makes interesting choices. It seemed like a good pairing, but yeah, I've watched it. I wanted to like it, but it was just
a heat check. Miss. You know, I mean that was Chazelle this year, right? You're trying to say, I think.
I don't want to take any picks away from anybody, but I mean, you know, I would say a couple of movies. Yeah, I mean, Bombback, and yeah, I mean, it just kind of happens where it just, you know, all year you see these rankings, like Jeff said. You know, you'll see them in the next couple of days, and whatever. I'm sure. Probably Scorsese's first right now, whatever. If Fincher is four or five. And one of these movies that are in the top five or six right now will absolutely suck because we don't know anything about them. No idea. Yeah.
Jeff, when they were doing, they were like introducing people on the red carpet or nominees for the acting categories, and they got to Hong Chau, and they're like, she got her start on like CSI Miami. And then like, she's like, but she broke through in the film world with her role in Downsizing. I was like, man, they could have left that one in the tent.
Seriously.
So the next one I'll pick, I'm going to pick a big ensemble cast movie. Came out in 2014. He had just been attached as producer on Argo. Directed Good Night in New York, and then he directed Monuments Men.
Monuments Men,
George Clooney movie. I wouldn't say it's to the level of maybe like a Downsizing, which was so clearly made for awards, but it was – it was a cast of people who you were like, this movie is going to be fucking amazing. Clooney, Damon, Bill Murray, John Goodman, Jean Dujardin just won for the Oscar. Bob Balaban, and that Cate Blanchett's in that movie. And it just was just an absolute nothing burger, just a nothing movie.
Think about movies like that. Like, when's the last time a human being watched that movie?
Great question.
Did anybody watch that movie yesterday? The world? Like, I always wonder that. Like, tell me, watch Monuments Men 3 days ago. Just like, I never see it anywhere. Where is it? What was it? Clooney as a director has done the impossible. He's gotten worse almost each time.
Yes.
You know, the second, you want to say his second movie is his best? Obviously, it's the one he was nominated for. He can't direct. Like, mm-hmm. stop directing. Just act. I like to watch you act.
Leatherheads. Oh, Leatherheads.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about a movie nobody's watched in forever.
Terrible. In terms of like Oscar bait and doing things that's so clearly to like get some interest, I think Christoph Waltz, great actor. And like, he's awesome. Like, he just has a new show out. But like, him in Downsizing had that feel. But casting Jean Dujardin for The Artist, it just felt like such a, look at us, look what we're doing. Yeah. So I'll do Monuments Men with my next pick.
Okay. I have a lot on my list that I really want, but I think I'll go with Babylon. I'll just take it straight up. I mean, Babylon, anytime you make a movie that is about Hollywood, you are trying to win an Oscar. I don't care if you think you are, you don't, you're trying to win an Oscar. And to make a 3-hour movie sucking off old Hollywood, you are just expecting it to happen. And that movie is maybe one of the most chaotic, overlong messes I've ever seen. That has, like, to be fair to the movie, it's a couple of very, very good scenes. The scene with Brad Pitt talking to Jean Smart, awesome. The scene like with the whole movie set, or where they do like the takes over and over again, awesome. But like, man, dude, that movie needed an editor, and it needed someone to tell Damien Chazelle, like, hey, no. Like, whatever you're trying to do right now, just no to this. Like, someone just he was too surrounded by yes men, I think. And yeah, I just got to go with that. Great ensemble cast. It was my number one most anticipated movie of this year, because Chazelle had not missed. That cast was, again, just insane. And just everything about it should have come together to make an incredible movie. And instead, it was just this 3-hour long, absolute train wreck third act movie. It was just it was rough. So, yeah, Babylon.
There's just too much great stuff in there for me to go towards.
Two great things. That's it.
No, I think there's a lot.
I'm actually with Gooch on this one. I don't love the movie either, but I'm surprised I liked it.
Also, won nothing.
Kurt, where did you land on Babylon again?
Yeah, it definitely has it has like a pretty decent sized sort of underground appreciation for it. To me, it was just like masturbatory. I mean, it's fine. There's stuff in it that I like. Yeah. But he's a guy now who I do think it is a point of his career, to your point, Ken Jack, where you need somebody to be like, look, like, how long is Whiplash?
About an hour 40.
Okay. Like, can we
let's
give that a shot. You want to do let's do a movie. It's 2 hours and, you know, 2 hours, an hour and 50, you know, I'm officially a little concerned here that the ego is getting out of control. That's what I would say. You know, there's stuff that I actually think Brad Pitt was miscast in it.
Honestly, I did too. Yeah.
You know,
he played Brad Pitt.
Yeah, like, you know, honestly, that feels like a Leo or even a Gosling. Like, it just didn't quite work for me. Maybe that was why, but like, yeah, you could have trimmed, I don't know, 40 minutes out of it. There are parts that I liked, but I don't think I'm going to go back to a lot, but I do think it's one of those movies that like 15 years from now, a lot of people will say this was like totally underappreciated. I don't think I'll be one of them, but
that's one where he played, speaking of Leo, he played just a much worse version of Rick Dalton in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Like, it was just a shadow of that character. So maybe that's why I would agree with you. He would be way better in that role, but it would have been very similar. But yeah, just again, there are good things within the movie of Babylon, but I think not just me, everyone had this expectation that it was going to be like a top tier movie. And it was going to win awards, do all these things. Because, again, you make movies about Hollywood, that's what it's built for, and just nothing. It got shut out.
Yeah. That was actually one of my bigger surprises from last night. That not winning score, that did kind of shock me.
Same score as well.
Justin Hurwitz had that in the bag.
Dude, he ripped himself off.
Is it, though?
I would argue Chazelle, you know, Kirk was talking about earlier. A director who, okay, great movies, I think has gotten worse with each film.
With who? With Chazelle?
Each film. Yeah.
I don't know. I like – you probably like Whiplash more than – I like
– Whiplash, I think, is the best movie of the last probably.
That's relative to like – that's tough because I wouldn't say that's like what we just said with Clooney. Like, I mean, I
– Yeah, it's a difference. Like, he's
I got to say, I actually think First Man
I liked a lot of First Man, yeah.
I do like First Man.
That IMAX of the landing scene.
Yeah. I mean, you can make the argument, I guess, Chris, but like, he hasn't fallen off a cliff.
It's a flimsy argument because he's only really made one misfire.
Right. Like if he directed his next movie was great, you wouldn't be surprised. If Clooney's next movie was great, you'd be stunned.
With Lucas and the whole prequel trilogy, he just had no one there to say no. Like every night, I think once you hit that level of like very early success with like a lot of good stuff, you need someone just right there in your corner to be like, I see what you're doing. Don't do that. Like
to my earlier point, like with the sort of box office stuff, like, you know, Lucas had directed and produced movies that made a fortune. Like this has not happened with you know, like it's strange that he gets that movie. Babylon must have cost
$80 million. I think
I have no idea.
It was like 150 mil to break even.
That's not going to happen. Like unless
they're spending that much to win awards and it didn't win anything.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. I'm up. I'm going to go back to last year. Another massive ensemble cast. One of the most anticipated of the year. Just ended up being an absolute stinker. Christian Bale, Margot Robbie.
Yeah.
Amsterdam. Amsterdam was, and I've hated it more. The more I've gotten away from it, I hate it more and more. It's just was boring as hell. And just, they tried to like fit in like a bunch of artsy close-up shots on their faces and they had linger on them. And it was just like, what are we doing here, David O. Russell? And I was like, maybe David O. Russell's a piece of shit, but he directs good movies. Like, I love American Hustle. I'll defend that movie to the grave. But this movie, God, Taylor Swift. I go with Taylor Swift, back-to-back picks. Swifties get fucked.
That's true. But, Taylor Swift, I like the – maybe read some scripts. Yeah. I don't know. Like, let's
– Her and Harry Styles have the same agent.
Another example, I think, of a director who's kind of lost his way, though, you know? I mean, this is what happens. Like, you know, he off to a great start, and now I think people haven't told him no for, I don't know, 15, 20 years. And, you know, and then kind of had a weird box office renaissance all of a sudden. And now, you know, it's kind of a mess.
Jeez.
And that was a Russell, right?
Yeah, George Clooney told him no.
Yeah, no, that's true. But, yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. So I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I that was on HBO. I think I watched it, and like, I half paid attention. It was brutal.
Yeah, if I had to watch that at home, I'd fall asleep. That like awesome. The only thing kept keeping me engaged was the fact that I'd paid money, sat in a theater, had popcorn in front of me. Like if that wasn't there, no, I would just shut it off, turn on South Park or something.
Chris, you're up.
All right, I feel like a lot of the movies that are on my list, there's overlap there, but I guess that makes sense. They're all Oscar bait. I'm going to stay with this year, and I'm going to go with Blonde. I thought Blonde was just miserable. You know, it was – thank you, Gooch. I know it was your least favorite movie of the year.
I forgot about it completely. I blocked it from my head.
I did too, but until last night when I realized she did get nominated, and it's just like I think – it's a prime example of, I mean, just an all-time misfire. Like, it's one of those rare movies that has the distinction of making you feel unclean as you're watching it. So, I mean, and again, I would be almost willing to be like, well, you know what? At least the lead performance is amazing. I'm sorry, man. I know all the fans of the show think I hate her. I don't. I don't even think Ana de Armas is that good in it. Like, I don't really feel like she got lost in the role. It's just a... When the word creepy comes to mind to describe a non-horror film, like, you know, it's not a good idea. Like, that's what this movie is.
That's a great pick.
That's one of those movies you have to see it to believe it. Because if I told you that there's a POV shot where you're JFK's dick getting sucked off, you would think I'm kidding. You would, like, not believe if someone told you that. You have to see it to believe it. Like, there's CGI fetuses. Like, what? So many decisions.
It's wild it got made. It is wild, that movie.
Yeah.
It's another guy.
You know what somebody pointed out to me? Andrew Downing, another guy's lost touch. What somebody pointed out to me was that the movie, for as long as it is, and it's insanely long, it never once highlights Marilyn Monroe's talent. Like, it's just her getting beaten up, her getting abused. Like, you rarely ever, at least, and I know that one's fiction, one is, but like, in La La Land, or I'm sorry, in Babylon, you saw like Margot Robbie's characters, like, why she became a star. In this, it's just like, was she famous? I don't know. I just, if you didn't know who it was, you'd just be like, God, this is brutal.
It just never made sense. Why fictionalize a real life person? Why not just make it's a not fictional even that. Character?
It's like, why fictionalize? Because like you can get away with stuff here and there. Because even like the Steve Jobs movie, right? The Steve Jobs movie, by all accounts, is not like really what happened in many of those things. But Steve Jobs movie is incredible, and they tell a condensed story. And Aaron Sorkin kind of explained that in a good way, where you're like, you know what? Like, I'm okay with that. Like, they're still telling the story, at least in a way that it was told, whether the family likes it or not, whatever. But like, this was just so egregious and so fucked up. It's like, what the hell? It doesn't got to be Bohemian Rhapsody, but like, oh my God. Which Bohemian Rhapsody was fucking fake too, so I don't even... Didn't
Social Network's a great example of a movie that took a lot of liberties and for the better made it very interesting.
Kirk, back to back picks.
Okay, all right. Back to back. Okay, one of my, I don't know, three favorite directors of all time. I think the biggest movie star and probably the best actor of this century. A writer coming off, I think, an Oscar. That'd be J. Edgar.
Ah, yes,
Eastwood. The Eastwood movie with DiCaprio, where if you go, I mean, DiCaprio is horrific in it.
Terrible. Is he really bad in it?
What's that?
He can't do a Southern accent.
He's really bad in it. He has this kind of voice where he's talking like, I don't know what's going on. The great Army Hammer, who I don't think is going to be appearing in any film soon as a co-star. Naomi Watts is in it.
He doesn't have any roles. What happened?
I don't know. I looked at his IMDb page. It's quiet. Judi Dench is in it. I mean, it is, and it's just, how long is it? It's 137 minutes. It's in the theater. And this was, you know, as it still is now, when DiCaprio makes a movie, it's a big event. He's doing it with Eastwood. It's, I bet you, again, I don't know who's seen the film here or not, but it's the one DiCaprio, like, absolute, can't argue whether you like it or not. Like, I didn't like the movie last year. But this is one of these ones where it's like, it's just a whiff. Move on. It's another, it was that time when Clint would just bang out a movie every year. Yeah. Once in a while was great, and then once in a while was just a piece of shit. He didn't care. He was like 30 days ahead of schedule. Always, all right, let's make Jersey Boys. All right, that sucked. Fine. Let's make Sully. Oh, that'd be $300 million. Great. Okay, let's make American Sniper. Let's make that Train to Paris movie. He just banged them out forever.
Where he cast the real people.
The real guys. The wildest director of all. Like, underrated, insane director. And biggest film figure in the history of the medium, I think. And the movie just absolutely stunk. Like it's a chore to get. I couldn't believe how bad it was. Endless.
He's a single take guy, right? Like he doesn't like to do multiple takes. Like,
and you can tell. That's the thing. Even the good Clint movies, these supporting actors, you can tell they're just like they're like, oh, this was like we're supposed to do this? Okay, and you can tell he's like, nope, let's go.
Just, like I've read stories.
William Goldman
scene.
Exactly. William Goldman wrote this book about absolute power, the making of that movie. Which he wrote, Eastwood directed. It's kind of a terrible movie, but you know, like Eastwood would be talking to a guy and they'd be reciting lines like Ed Harris or whatever. And they didn't realize that Eastwood was actually just filming him. He's like, nope, that actually works. That's natural. Let's go. And then he said they were like 18 days ahead of schedule. And that's why, you know, that's why he's Clint. There's no one like Clint, but that movie absolutely stinks. The second one, I think I'm going to go with is Concussion,
Tell the truth.
Yeah. I mean, that's the last thing. I mean, this is a movie that like had Will Smith, you know, again with the accent and looking different and just begging for people to talk about. No one went to see it. It was like a school project watching it. I don't really know. You know, and I think there is a movie there, probably. Like if it's in different hands. I don't know if Aaron Sorkin wrote it and somebody else directed it, and it was sort of a quick like look at them trying to do something as opposed to this.
If it was a different movie.
Yeah, right. If David Fincher directed it and Aaron Sorkin wrote it, maybe it'd be good. But this one just did not. And it was like, at the time, it was like, oh, Will Smith's finally, he's been nominated a couple of times. Now he's going to get his Oscar for playing this really important role. And all that lasts is that line. So, I mean, I think that's sort of two big stars. At the time, probably each were maybe Will Smith was starting to fade a little bit. But sort of the one or two biggest stars in the world just absolutely whiffing on these endlessly, 9 times out of 10, dreadful, like sort of biopics or hero movies where this one guy is going, you know, there's always a scene where he goes over to some, like in this movie, some former football player's house who's sitting there shaking and Will Smith like walks up and kind of looks into the sky and is like, I have to fix this. And you're like, what the fuck am I watching? What is this crap?
Dude, Will Smith had a 5-year run there where he took a lot of roles like that.
I mean, I have a couple of Will Smiths on my list that I don't even think I'm going to pick, but like.
Yeah. And honestly, the one he won for, like, if it's 10% worse, could have been that. I mean, like if you look at the premise of that movie, that could easily have been a disaster. Easily.
I thought it was going to be bad before I saw it. It's surprising.
That's a good example of, again, of a liberty, like tremendous liberties are taken with that story, obviously. And it happened to work. So, yeah.
Yep. Is it me now? Yeah, I believe so. Yep. Okay. I'm going to go with a movie that I think actually – no, it did get nominated for something. But it's mainly known now for being mocked by a comedy film that came out 7 years later. I'm going to go with I Am Sam. Just like Sean Penn in that role. He did get nominated. I mean, outside of the Gucci, something funny.
I mean, it's the never go full.
Yeah, right. Right.
Right, simple. Yeah.
And it's just so schmaltzy. And it bizarrely – I don't know when the last time you guys saw this, has like a bunch of shitty Beatles covers for the soundtrack.
Yes, correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is just weird. And which I think it's trying to connect back to his daughter. It's just a rough movie, man. I mean, it's ironic Tropic Thunder parodied it because go back and rewatch the trailer. It plays out like something that that Tropic Thunder would make fun of. Yeah.
We're starting to enter a time in history, even then where in the theater, I was like, this person should not be playing this role. This feels very, very, very odd that this is happening. I think Michelle Pfeiffer is the co-star, right? Is that right?
Yeah, she's his lawyer.
Right.
And then that was, I think, Dakota Fanning's like introduction to the world.
She's right. That's right. I think that's
right. But it's a rough one.
Goochman's, right? Or did you?
No, he just.
Am I up?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you're. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Then I'm going to go with Welcome to Marwen.
Damn, I wanted that. I wanted that.
One of the more powerful trailers I think I ever saw. First time seeing it on a big screen, I was like, holy shit, this movie, Steve Carell is here to win an Oscar. This is emotional. And I look up the backstory. It's based on a book that's very popular, I think, right? Based on a very popopular book.
Big director.
I'm like, this is going to be a hit. And then you see it, just like
Zemeckis.
Zemeckis. Good Lord. I think that's what put Zemeckis in the grave. Just a bad movie. Steve Carell's got a few of these too, by the way, where he sneakily has been trying for a while to break through as a very serious actor, and I'm not sure it's in the cards for him.
Foxcatcher solid. After that, Foxcatcher rules. Was rough sledding.
But like, beautiful boy.
Yeah, he kind of has that Robin Williams syndrome where he's can get really schmaltzy with these sort of picking these roles.
Yeah, that is a really good comparison. His movies even have the Robin Williams piano in the background sometimes.
Right, like Robin Williams could play that. Yeah. I remember seeing that trailer and thinking, like,
what was the war movie he did with Bryan Cranston? That was another one there was that war movie he did with like Bryan Cranston and Last Flag Flying.
That's a Linklater.
Was it Last Flag Flying?
It's the Linklater movie, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Yeah.
When he's
that was Linklater?
I think it was. So.
Wow. That was a rough one.
But I remember
Zemeckis' career.
Nobody has a career like Zemeckis. It's insane.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Once he discovered animation, his career would flush down the toilet. It was unbelievable. The worst thing to happen to him was discovering animation.
Like even Flight is actually like Denzel's great in it, but it's actually if you watch, it's a mess. Like it's a
it's big time.
It's tonally really inconsistent.
Yeah,
but, John Goodman's character belongs in a different movie. I do like it, but yeah.
Yeah, I forgot. That's a good pick. I forgot.
Welcome to Marwen is just fucking. It's just creepy.
It's creepy.
And they marketed the hell out of it too. Like mm-hmm. Somebody was talking earlier about like showing trailers months in advance. I think it was Cats you were talking about, dude. It's like they showed the trailer for this like in the early part of summer for a December release. So I mean, I'm willing to bet this thing bombed even harder than people let on because they spent a ton of money marketing it.
Made 13 mm-hmm. million in America.
Oh my God.
Oh my
no, it's
God. Just,
yeah.
That's Jeez. More than it deserves, honestly.
And then he
way more.
Then he turned around and did The Witches with Anne Hathaway and Pinocchio. What a run.
God.
Was he a producer on Ready Player One, or is that just because it was called the Zemeckis Cube? Am I inventing that in my head?
He wasn't, I like Ready Player One. I think he unfairly gets some odd credit for Ready Player One just because they reference his name. Oh, fuck, Marwen. God dang it, I wanted Marwen. All right, Ken Jack, you're up next.
I wanted Marwen too. That was a very late steal for me. Okay, let's do fucking Marwen. Those dolls, man. Let's do, we were just talking about this before. I'll do The Post. The Post was another one that was definitely built to win an Oscar, you know, because I think that's a movie that, like, that was when, like, they looked at Spotlight, right? And they were like, we could do that. We got this on the bag. And they're like, and it was just such a boring movie, such an unbelievably boring movie to come from the mind of Steven Spielberg. And one of those things where, like, they put Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep in a movie and they were like, it's in the back. We don't even need to try anymore. And it was just no good. That was not a good movie. It was very boring and overlong. Not a fan. Very disappointing.
Kirk
old,
and I,
that was the old Avengers, right?
Yeah, old Avengers. Our theater clapped when Ken, Jack, and I saw. Kirk and I, we talked about something in the Chicago dog walk we did the other day with the three of us. Top 10 movie of all time. I know it's your number one, All the President's Men. And I know this has nothing to do with All the President's Men, but it feels so close to it that it bothers me. Like, it just – because that last scene, it's Frank Wills kind of, like, jiggling the door handle, seeing somebody broke in the water. And I hate how close it's kind of connected. And I just want The Post to go away.
No, I said it reminds me of the end of – the way Spielberg did it was almost like the end of, like, Rogue One, where they're, like, racing and getting Princess Leia the – you know what I mean? It's almost like like they're running – oh, my God, it's Watergate. And like you said, it's true. Like, old people in the theater are like, oh, my God. This is the same thing.
It's going to be a
Spielberg just can't.
Today will be a nice and
right.
Which again, it'll be a nice normal day at the Watergate Hotel
with us together in a pod. You're now sick of it because we've said it 100 times. But it's insane that one of his best endings is the movie that he probably I expected him to be the most over the top obnoxious with, and that's The Fabelmans.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
A great ending. His best ending probably.
I'm going to go with a gross movie. Like really, and it's oddly somehow worse than Blonde in terms of just like, what are they doing? And that's Diana. Diana with Naomi Watts and Princess Diana. Bad. And like, what?
Naomi Watts.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, I'm thinking the one with Kristen Stewart. Yeah.
When we talk about bad movies, there's like bad movies. There's. Like, we did this song, and it's like with the new Jurassic Park movie. Like, there's bad movie. This movie, like, is that whole other level of bad. Or when someone, when we talk about a movie, because that's the worst movie I've seen all year, I'm like, well, you got to see more movies. Because trust me, there's things out there. Diana fits that bill. Diana is so fucking terrible. And just such a gross disservice to, like, Princess Diana, the idea of biopics, and it was crafted for her to win an award. And I think she got a Razzie for it. It's got like 7% of our tomatoes critics, 26 audience. I gave it a 12. Ken Jack gave it a 5. Diana was horrible. And now that's two Diana. And I do think Kristen Stewart was very good in that movie. They would have made it more of – like I wish like – again, we keep using this. I wish like a Sorkin would have wrote that movie, like someone with really great writing chops. But the Diana movies aren't work. Like they're not getting the awards they think they are. Not good. That movie was brutal.
That's who should win the Razzies and be nominated. Like they should nominate people for movies you know are going to be shit. It's when they go for it and they suck. Yeah. That's the ones that should be nominated.
Didn't Ana de Armas get nominated for a Razzie this year too?
I think she did. Pretty sure. That happens once in a while.
Yeah, nominated for both. Yeah.
Who is it? There's an actor that always shows up to receive their Razzie. I forget who it is. It might have been Bullock. I forget.
Sandra Bullock did. I think Halle Berry did too.
Halle Berry famously did. And Tom Green, I remember from Freddy Got Fingered, rolled out his own red carpet. That was kind of funny.
That kind of rocks.
Yeah.
Last one for me. There's the Will Smith movie I want to pick, but I just don't feel like it has the oomph. So I'm going to go with a movie that, I don't know, people I guess kind of like it. It's got like 70s and Rotten Tomatoes. I mean, I don't think it's a horrible movie, but it's one of those movies that I'm like, why the fuck did this get a Best Picture nomination? And because of one reason, because Steven Spielberg directed it. And this is a movie that was made to win awards, and I just like Ken Jack cheered at old Baz Luhrmann going 0-for with Elvis, I loved when War Horse went 0-for 6. I just really don't like War Horse. That's a Spielberg. Like, don't do that, Spielberg. Like, don't do that. It was adapted from a play that had just become very popular on Broadway. It was a huge deal in New York. It was very cool on stage because like they had the horses. They were kind of done in the same way they do like the Lion King on stage, but just an absolute lifeless production. and totally made to win Oscars and to like, that's such a classic, like this is an Oscar movie. And I'm so glad that that movie waltzed in and did nothing. And I'm pretty sure it got nominated over something that I wanted to have get nominated to. Oh, that was such a weird.
Watching Spielberg do that was like watching like Wolfgang Puck make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. It was just such a waste of talent.
Weird year for Best Picture nominees too. You had The Artist, Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, The Help, which has definitely not been well received, War Horse, The Tree of Life, which is
any good movies? I like The Artist.
But. Hugo was nominated, which is obviously one of the weirder releases in the career of Martin Scorsese. Midnight in Paris, which I still love Midnight in Paris, even though people have the Woody Allen effect. Moneyball.
You're the big Woody Allen guy, yeah.
Yeah, I do, yeah. Moneyball, The Descendants. I do like The Descendants. I was big speaking of Alexander Payne. But yeah, I was never – War Horse for me was just such a – ugh. Hated it.
I probably like it more than you do, but it's a very easy movie to make fun of. Like it feels like a parody of Spielberg and like trying to recapture that whimsy from the 80s. And it's like you can't – I once heard somebody say you can't make E.T. and have Elliot be 18, which is essentially what the fucking kid in War Horse was. So, yeah, not great.
Pass. Yeah, War Horse always. Pass on War Horse. That's my last pick, War Horse. So there's a Will Smith movie I want to talk about before we're done here. Ken Jack.
Yeah.
So there's one I want to pick that I'm not going to – I don't think anyone else will even have it on the list, but I'm sure you would remember this. Jeff, do you remember Mary, Queen of Scots?
Fucking hell. I'm not even kidding.
Yeah.
I'm not even kidding. That was going to be my next pick.
Was that?
No,
was
I'm
that
not picking Margot it. I'm not going to pick it. I'm not going to pick it.
Margot Robbie
and Saoirse Ronan. Yeah.
It's between three.
That one was one where I thought that was going to be one of the best movies of that year because that was Margot Robbie opposite Saoirse Ronan about in a period piece. Like, even if it wasn't going to be that great of a movie, that seemed like it was going to be like the Oscar front runner for everything. And it just kind of wasn't. Instead, I'm between two other ones. Another one that I don't think anyone else would pick, which is Australia from Baz Luhrmann, that 3-hour long piece of shit, versus the one I'll actually pick, which is The Greatest Showman, a movie that somehow made a whimsical story out of the guy that beat out the teeth out of a black woman so that she could pretend to be George Washington's nanny growing up. And that guy was singing and dancing, making all these songs, didn't win anything, and I was the happier man for it, because that movie, just whitewashing out of, or ball washing P.T. Barnum, one of the historically big pieces of shit, was just hysterical to me. It was one of the most bizarre moves in history, and everyone, and like, audiences ate it up, they love those songs and everything, like, that was a bad dude. He was a real bad dude. They acted like he was like, they acted like he was collecting rejects because no one else wanted them, and he wanted to give them life. Like, no, dude. He's, like, exploiting all the freak shows to make him money and make him rich. What are you talking about here? Just, I don't know.
I forgot you're an all-time Greatest Showman hater.
Oh, yeah. I needed that for the last one.
It can't be problematic. Zac Efron dated Zendaya.
They love that.
Yeah, that's right.
That was one of those Oscar best song performances where everyone's like, let's fucking, and then just doesn't win. I think Remember Me beat it, maybe.
P.T. Barnum saw an interracial kiss, he would like, get them like thrown in jail. Like, you're gonna be fucking shitting me here. P.T. Barnum, all time piece of shit.
Gooch, you're up next.
Actually, now that you've picked that, I want to piggyback off of it. Another movie that actually did win one Oscar for a leading performance, but I think is absolute dog shit, took way too many liberties. It is basically Rich White People, the movie. It is The Blind Side.
I do not like The Blind Side.
That movie is borderline disgusting. In its portrayal of Michael Orr, him walking in his bedroom and saying, I never seen one of them before. Never had one of them before. What?
I'm just assault. No, I don't know if we talked about this, Kirk. I'm not a Sandra Bullock guy.
Yeah, she's never been one of my favorites either.
Gravity, there's no, and I love Alfonso Cuarón, but Gravity for me, I've always had, and I like it, but I know that if there's someone else in that movie, I would have loved Gravity, where like Bullock just, it's just Sandra Bullock to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Kate Blanchett or somebody. Yeah, she. Yeah, I mean, in that movie would have been better. Yeah, she's never really landed for me either. I'm not really sure why, but yeah, I mean, that movie, if that got made today, would get crucified. Totally. Just be like, what the hell is going on? It's true. It's just like, yeah, I mean, it's
I feel bad for Michael Orr because like he's come out like immediately,
he hates it, right?
Yo, he hates it because it like just portrays him as like the biggest victim,
like an idiot
of all time. And
like it's like Roots or something. Like he's never been like America. Yeah. Like, what the fuck is this? Yeah. I'm stupid.
What's a bad
Creed 3 just beat it though, which was nice. It was nice that I like that Creed 3 kind of just took some records away from it, and yeah, that was good.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not gonna give any spoilers because I know people watch this, but we talked about this. There's a scene I liked Creed 3. There's a scene in Creed 3 that I think might be the worst scene, not in the history of film, in the history of entertainment. Even like people filming birthday parties, anybody's ever filmed anything, I think, has the worst scene of all time.
We'll throw a spoiler tag. I think we talked about it on this podcast. I referenced that. It's the death scene.
Yes, it's. I'm like, what the fuck is going on?
And here? I know that you love the Rocky movies and you like this movie and you like the Creed movies. Yeah. I said you just didn't like him. I said our other colleague who loves these movies as well, just as much as us, Brandon. Love that scene, but there's the footnote of he's a massive Cosby Show fan.
Well, Brandon is
yeah, of course.
Brandon's not a massive Cosby Show fan. He's a massive Bill Cosby fan. That's what I would say.
Correct.
Yeah, more so in the last 10 years. But yeah, I would say it's whatever. I mean, yeah, it's a good movie, but that's an unbelievably bad scene. But yeah, that is a good pick. I wouldn't have thought of that movie. That's a good pick. Ugh. She won for that. She fucking won for that.
Well, in a good year, too.
Crazy.
It was like Meryl Streep for like Julie and Julia, and I think Carey Mulligan for An Education. You had the girl from Precious. Mm-hmm. Like there was some powerhouse performances there.
Wasn't she with that guy who was like a motorcycle guy or something?
Yeah, it was Jesse James?
Yeah. Was he her date at that
time? Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
The voters were blinded by her white pants she was running around on the football field in.
Like, right. Yeah. She wouldn't take any shit, that woman. Nope. Any shit.
Good Lord.
It shows how much things have changed, because when that movie came out, it was in terms of mainstream audiences, like, you know, west side of Lansing, Michigan audiences, they fucking loved it. It was a huge, huge
phenomenon. Success. Yeah. Yeah. Huge book, too. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, for my last pick, I'm really glad this fell to me. I don't think it's the most memorable of the actor tries to get an Oscar and fails movies, but I think it's probably the worst. And that is one, Gotti, starring John Travolta.
Don't believe that supposed credits. To be an Oscar hopeful, though?
I'm not sure a lot of Oscar buzz around that one, Chris.
I don't think the buzz was that high.
But coming in for him, that's a fair point. It did come out like July, but it was that, and then the next movie he did, The Fanatic, where it's like it's him. I'm really trying to stretch as an actor, and it's just one of those. It's like a Mad Libs of a movie. It's like a movie directed by Turtle from Entourage, starring John Travolta as
no, it's E from Entourage.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, no, it's Kevin Conley. I'm sorry. Yeah, with Pitbull.
Jerry Ferrara would have done well.
Yeah.
Dude, the Pitbull, the scene where the Pitbull plays while they're out, all these Italian dudes are out grilling in the 80s in like their street, and it's just like Mr. 305 rap song blaring in the background. Like, what was the thought process there, Mr. Kevin Connolly? I'd love to know.
I'm in an age where I always rooting for Travolta. I suffered through the downtime, loved the comeback. I'm suffering through, like, I saw him last night. I'm watching him. He's crying. I'm getting emotional. I'm like, does this guy have one? Is it possible that somebody, the right director, puts him in a role, or is he just too far gone in like bizarro world now? Is it?
He was good in the OJ thing. He was pretty solid.
Yeah, right. That's true. Yeah, that's true. Playing Robert Shapiro. Yeah, that's true.
He's got to stop debuting a new face every 6 months.
It's not good. I don't know.
It's the work in here and like on his eyebrows and his lips.
We said this last night. We were texting about the Oscars, and I said, and I kind of pulled it back a little bit because obviously he was very emotional in that moment over introducing, which I mean, I'm sure he's glad that he was like, man, this is a brutal thing to have to go up and do. But he is like he's the forever clubhouse leader of weirdest human in Hollywood.
No question. No question.
Oh, yeah.
No question.
But like, I love movies. Adele Dazeem from Frozen.
Wickedly talented. Yeah.
And then the next year he came back and apologized and somehow he made it worse.
Yeah.
He came back and said, I'm sorry.
Dude, I love him, man. I love John Travolta.
Kirk, last he's an anomaly.
By the way, In Memoriam, not including Charlie Dean. What are we doing? One of your best pictures, one of the leading stars and one of the best picture nominees, just nothing for?
That was kind of weird.
Crazy. Yeah. I'm up, right? Last pick?
Last pick.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I had a couple that I was going to go. I'll go with, again, not particularly memorable, but another example of these horrific, like weird biopics and like a star who just won. And we mentioned this guy, the other guy, the co-star, but the star who just won an Oscar and everyone's kind of likes her. So she like just has a different haircut. It's the completely forgettable Battle of the Sexes movie with Emma Stone.
Oh my God.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Good call. And
Bobby Riggs movie, which was so. There was actually a TV movie with Holly Hunter and I think the late Ron Silver. And it's like 50 times better. It was like, this is back when Lifetime made like shitty TV movies. Much better. Like Emma Stone, like, has a haircut. And there's literally scenes in the movie where Billie Jean King is struggling with her sexuality. And like a woman walks by and she basically is like, you know, maybe I am attracted to women instead of men. They're just telling you everything the whole time. And of course, Carell's way overplaying Bobby Riggs. It's just, I don't know if you guys saw it or not. It's terrible, but it's another example of like at the time, everyone's like, oh, this like Emma Stone, this is her moment. Like she might win another Oscar. And it's like, nope, this was terrible, awful, fucking forgettable vomit.
It's a good thing she got things back on track with movie. Burnt.
That's true. I had two. My other was that the last pick overall?
Or yeah.
Not? Yeah. Are we doing four or five?
Four,
right?
Okay.
I had two, Emma Stone again. I had two Cameron Crowe movies. I had Aloha.
Aloha.
And rough. Elizabeth Town, which was supposed to be a big Oscar movie. And then all the other musicals, you know, pick them, Phantom of the Opera, whatever you want. Yeah. They're all
gone. See, that's another one. They didn't realize Gerard Butler didn't know how to sing. They were just like, yeah, well, he'll just make him the star of our movie. It's just a weird move.
Massive problem. Now, the Will Smith one, 7 pounds, people always talk about.
That, collateral beauty,
I think, is way worse.
That's the Kate Winslet one.
Right? Oh, yeah.
There's a bunch of Helen Mirren, I think, is in it.
Where they're like ghosts. Like, it's just, weird.
It was like
Kate Winslet, the reader. did you guys ever see that? Where she's an ex-Nazi.
She won for that. Yeah. It's her only Oscar. And that movie cost the Dark Knight a Best Picture nomination.
The Reader was also, the Reader was the year that also Australia, there's another one.
Dog shit movie. Did mention it before. Happy I mentioned
Radio.
That was a bad year.
Radio might be worse than I Am Sam, actually.
I think it is.
Yeah.
At least everyone tries harder than I Am Sam. Radio. Dude, okay, this is a very
Radio. You should pick Radio retroact. I think you should put that in. Radio is
put that over Gotti.
Radio is a great Radio.
This is which I guess this will forever now be his final pick, but the movie my dad, I guess, took to the grave, the most boring movie of his life, The Mule with Clint Eastwood. I'll never
not all of it.
I don't agree with that, but okay. I don't want to fight with your dad, but I like The Mule.
You like The Mule?
Yeah, it's old Clint, and I actually, you know what I like about that? I like the Bradley Cooper, like it was like, I love Clint, so I'm just going to do this role.
Yeah, that's fair.
I'm always a Bradley Cooper guy after that now. Even with this. By the way, we might as well pick this Bradley Cooper movie, I think. If we had to right now make a draft of which movie in the next couple of years will be in this draft, this Cooper movie coming up looks like a real candidate.
Wait, what is it again? It's
the Leonard Bernstein movie, right?
Yeah, they're filming literally outside of my apartment. Like,
right. Which feels like maybe it'll be great. He'll prove me wrong, but boy, this feels like it could be a future candidate. Like,
House of Gucci?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that was on my short list.
Yep. Amelia.
Yeah, that was on mine too. Okay, we're on the
Amelia Earhart movie really.
What
bad.
Was that? What was that Andrew Garfield movie that came out 2 years ago?
Tick Tick Boom.
Yeah, Tick Tick Boom would be on there for me. Like it was like not a bad movie, but that's one that was built to expressly win.
The Goldfinch.
Hillbilly Elegy. Yeah. Oh, Goldfinch was bad.
And then two that are not as like. No, this one's a weird one. This one was like downsizing in terms of it was on every top, like, this is going to be nominated was, again, this is a movie. I don't know if people have seen this. Billy Lynn's Halftime Walk.
Yes, from
Holy
shit.
That's nice.
That's Ang Lee.
Yeah. And he did it. It was before Gemini Man. And he had, like, the frames per second thing going on, so it looked really weird. And then last one, the one from this year, which is amazing when you think about it. Whatever you want to call it, The Son, after The Father came out a couple years ago.
Yeah. Oh, and then so bad.
Hugh Jackman in The Son.
And The Father was so good.
Yeah.
Father was so good.
Yeah.
It was incredible.
Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk has to be one of the worst titles ever for a movie. Oh, man. That was on my list. The one that you did not say, there was only one that you didn't say, Jeff, or that wasn't drafted. Do you remember the movie The Soloist with Robert Downey Jr. and Jamie Foxx, where like it was supposed to come out, I think, at the end of 2008. And this was like when Robert Downey Jr. was the king. Like, it was right after he did Iron Man and right after he did Tropic Thunder. And that movie is so schmaltzy to a point where there's literally a scene where a guy is playing the violin and doves fly like behind him in some beautiful moments of majesty. So yeah, not a very good movie, not horrible. And that's why I didn't pick it, but yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. The only few that haven't been brought up, Hillbilly Elegy. I fucking hate that movie. Fuck that.
Bad movie.
Judge, another RDJ, RDJ, Robert Duvall.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if they were trying to go for Oscars with this, but the way they shot it, it felt like they were. Our good boys, the Russo brothers, their movie Cherry.
Cherry. Oh, yeah. That came out already?
There's a whole Robin Williams division. Like, if you want to go back. Francis Ford Coppola directed him in a movie called Jack. Where he is like almost like a Ben.
Grown-up
like,
boy.
He's like 10 years old. It's so fucking – Cosby's in that movie. It's so fucking
– Is he?
Yeah, and Jennifer Lopez is like one of her first roles.
It's his teacher in the movie. It's just – he had like a Patch Adams. He had this weird like fight where he just kept doing these things.
What Dreams May Come.
Yep.
Toys.
Yeah. It was like the worst version of Big. That's all I remember from Jack. It was a significantly worse version of Big.
But I think Radio is actually the best pick in the whole draft. That wasn't even taken. I can't encourage people to watch Radio enough. It's incredible. Like, it's amazing to watch. The first time I saw the trailer, I was like, this is really happening?
Jeff, do you remember?
Right after Jerry Maguire, probably, right?
It's 3 or 4 years or more. But yeah, it was him going for Oscar number two.
Yeah, he went all in.
Yeah.
I remember I had a football coach, and if you did something stupid, he would call you Radio.
that's the exact that movie. That's it, Kirk. Thanks for joining us. Let me know if you're hanging on the couch tonight and you're just sitting there and you go, you know what? Throw on Monuments, man. Give it a watch.
I feel like it's an ultimate. We'll probably all get together and do a watch along at some point. I would do a Radio watch along at some point. That I would.
We have talked about coming up to Boston doing a live watch of a movie with your fans and kind of our fans are in Boston.
Wow.
Yeah, it could be
Radio.
Time.
Yeah,
could be Radio. Time.
We'll do double feature that and I Am Sam. We'll go back to back.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Kirk. That's it for this episode. The Oscars done. For Kirk, Chris, Gooch, Ken, Jack, I'm Jeff DeLeo. We'll talk to you.
Yeah. Have a good week at the box office, folks.
Shine is the number one frozen fruit bar brand in America, and once you try them, it's easy to see why. Their fruit bars and mini fruit pops are made with real fruit or fruit juice using simple ingredients you can pronounce. That means no high fructose corn syrup and no artificial colors or flavors. Outshine bars are gluten-free and even a good source of vitamin C. And the flavor lineup? It's stacked. We're talking strawberry, mango, coconut, watermelon, pineapple, cherry. You name it, there's something for whatever you're craving. You've got classic fruit bars, mini fruit pops, and fruit blends that swirl multiple flavors together. Think pina colada, cherry limeade, and more. Find your new favorite refreshing snack, Outshine, at retailers nationwide.
Hey, it's Fran from Chicks in the Office. It's peak summer. One plan is turning into five, but trust, I'll be wearing Abercrombie to all of them. Catch me in their Sloan tailored pant at work and then the happy hour right after. The Dylan dress for dinner plans when you want something easy but still put together. And of course, their denim. Because Abercrombie denim just works, no matter the plan. Keep up with the pace of summer without overthinking it. Shop in the app, online, and in stores.
Dedication isn't born in the light of day. It's carved in the quiet hours before the world blinks awake. At Boar's Head, we rise with a mission to deliver craftsmanship worthy of your table. A slice of something special folded into every moment worth savoring. Because dedication means delivering only the very best. Boar's Head, committed to craft since 1905.